TSN 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. And now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great, Drew.
Doing awesome, Drew. 4 wins in a row for the Jets. Life couldn't be better. My life is always awesome, though. I mean, I wake up and I have a huge smile on my face. Everything's good. I'm a happy guy. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to talk Jets with my two best friends in the entire world. Let's go.
Wow, that was really a good positive affirmation. I mean, I was just expecting a little, you know, I'm doing well, good to see you, enjoying my coffee, something like that. But that was a lot better. Richie, I have to say, in comparison, your hello was really weak.
Yeah, you know, I can't compare to Ezzy's passion last night. I mean, this morning. Last night his passion was for 3 bags of popcorn in the press box.
Yeah, that was a lot of popcorn last night.
Yeah, and Richie's more, you know, level-headed. When the Jets score, I get up and start running around the press box high-fiving Gary Lawless. But Richie's pretty calm. He's a professional, as you are, Drew. I'm a little bit more emotional like that. But it was exciting. The last couple of games at the MTS Center have they not been the loudest that building's ever been. I think they were even louder than it was for the Prince concert. And apparently he did 7 encores, 2 were for Richie.
The Prince concert was great. Should we talk about that?
No, probably not. Okay. We can talk about that a little bit later on. Why don't we get right into last night's Jets-Hurricanes game?
Oh, Drew, strictly business today.
Well, I'm strictly business, at least for the first 3 minutes that we've been on air. You know, people want to know our insight into what happened last night at the MTS Center with the Jets defeating...
Okay, so then you need to stop talking, and Ezzy and I will take over.
Okay, I see how it is already. It's going to be a punchy 3 hours. This might be our last program ever. Anyways, Jets with a 4-2 victory over the Carolina Hurricanes last night at MTS Center. We said this pretty much after Tuesday's dramatic victory against the Boston Bruins. We said this has all the makings of a trap game, and if the Jets don't come out and take care of business against Carolina, really the victory against Boston is almost moot. But I'm glad to say that the Jets were prepared for that. They didn't have the emotional letdown, and they defeated the Hurricanes by a 4-2 margin.
Drew, it was imperative that they came out strong, and the early 2-0 lead.
Just over 5 minutes into the game with the 2-0 lead.
And when you get a 2-0 lead on a team that is playing a forward short, they only dress 11 forwards.
Which is important to note. Jeff Skinner for the Carolina Hurricanes was a late scratch last night with what they said was flu-like symptoms. Other people are saying maybe he's a little banged up from the Edmonton game, but dirty whatever. No Jeff Skinner means the Hurricanes were without their best player.
Best forward. You're playing 11 forwards, Ezzy, and you're playing the third game of 4 nights on the road.
Yep. I mean... Yeah, and originally it was we were being told it was an upper body injury, but that's just a way for them not to say what the injury was. But it was the flu, so I don't think he's expected to be out that long. But the Hurricanes were badly outplayed. I think the shots were something like 28-12 or something after 2 periods.
31-15.
Okay, 31-15. So I was only off by 4 or 5, you know.
Yeah.
So the first 2 periods were dominated by the Jets. I mean, they were clearly getting into the zone, Richie, with ease, and I think you made that point a few times. You know, Jaro Spacek, who, Drew, I know you want to get into later, the trade with Montreal with Spacek and Caberle. But the Jets have now beat the Hurricanes 3 times. And before the season started, you know, we were saying that maybe the only team that the Jets are going to beat on a consistent basis is the Florida Panthers.
Right.
But right now, the Jets have found a way to beat the Hurricanes fairly easily. The Jets played really well. The first couple goals were super important, but... The way the team played throughout the game was really impressive. I thought that, you know, we've heard a lot about Coach Noel wanting a 60-minute effort, Drew, and I thought, you know, the Jets played well for maybe 45 to 50 minutes. In the third period, they let Carolina get back into it a little bit.
Which is natural. You're up 4-0. You're gonna sit back a little bit more.
You're up 4-0. You're gonna roll 4 lines, and I think the fourth line got taken advantage of on the first goal. I think.
Yeah.
The second one was a power play goal. So what happens there is, and just to confirm that. Yeah, so what you're doing, Drew, is you're rolling the lines and...
You're playing your fourth line. I mean, the fourth line played about 3 or 4 minutes more than they do in sort of quote-unquote regular games.
Sorry, what it was the GST line was on for the first goal games, but the fourth line, took a penalty, which led to the power play, led to the second goal. You're going to roll your lines. You're going to try and rest it up for Detroit, so that's what happens.
Exactly. Let's start in the first period there. The Jets came out like a house on fire.
Yep.
35 seconds into the game, and this is a goal only Dustin Byfuglien could score. Because, you know, really, you have to ask yourself, what is your defenseman doing behind the net to begin with, behind the opponent's net? He's behind the net. Cam Ward cheats off the goalpost. Dustin Byfuglien sees him cheating, a very heads-up play, a smart play, like Coach Noel said. Bangs it in off of Cam Ward. 35 seconds into the game, the Jets are up 1-0.
Yeah, and guys, that goal happened so quickly. Obviously, it was 35 seconds in.
Your head was buried in a bag of popcorn. You didn't even see it.
But, you know, the goal happened, and I remember turning over to Michael Remus, who sits to my right, and then Dave Manuk, who sits to my left, and they kind of were saying, like, what just happened? Ward let in a terrible goal there, but I think you just got it bang on. I think it was a heads-up play. He did that on purpose. He shot it to the net knowing that he was cheating, and that was a smart play.
Yeah,
so I'm glad that he got credit for that, because in the NHL, sometimes, you know, Richie, you know, obviously the greatest player of all time, and I know your favorite player of all time, Wayne Gretzky, he did that many times in his career, bank pucks off of goalie skates when they're not looking. That's a very smart move, and I don't think Byfuglien gets credit for his smart shots. I think he's currently second in the NHL in shots, something like that. He's one of the guys that shoots the most in the league. But the thing is, a lot of his shots are smart. He's not the type of guy, Kane maybe so, I don't want to knock Kane because he had another pretty good game, and he's had a very good last 3 or 4 weeks. But Byfuglien is pretty smart and accurate with his shot, so I think you're right on. They really got out to the early lead, and that goal was extremely smart. Kane's goal, too, was really just putting the puck on the net.
Well, let's talk about that. So Byfuglien scores to make it 1-0 Jets 34 seconds into the game. And then, really, 4.5 minutes later, you have Evander Kane gets knocked down in the Hurricane zone, gets back up, really just takes an innocuous shot on the net from the, you know, above the circle on the left-hand side.
Yep.
And there's traffic in front of the net, and Cam Ward is getting jostled, and it could have been goaltender interference. I've seen it called for less. No call, puck's in the back of the net.
Yep.
Jets are up 2-0, and it's almost game over at that point.
Yeah, Drew, I mean, Cam Ward, not as strong as game. Jets come out, they get to play with the lead, which they've done a ton this year. And you get to take what's given to you. The Carolina team is really aggressive, and so there's going to be turnovers. There was a lot of turnovers in the neutral zone, a lot of easy entries into the offensive zone. You know, we talked about it last night on the post-game podcast. What you're dealing with, Drew, is a team with a new coach, a new defenseman, short of forward. I mean, if you're not beating that team last night.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to take advantage of you're playing against a weakened opponent, and you have to take advantage of them, and the Jets did that right off the start. They didn't even let Carolina have a chance really to breathe, to even get their legs under them and maybe think they could be competitive in this game. The Jets came out 34 seconds in, boom, 1-0. 4.5 minutes later, boom, 2-0. Before the Hurricanes can sort of get their legs under them, even get a feel for the game, they're 2 goals down. Kudos to the Jets for coming out strong. It's really, I mean, you know, they deserve full marks for that.
And Drew, in hockey, you hear a lot of cliches, and we talked about some of our, kind of joking around last week about some of our favorite cliches. And you'll hear a lot that it's important to get the first goal. And I think it's really important for a young team like the Jets. I really do. And I think the last stat was that when they score the first goal or they're leading after two, they've only lost one game. And when they're trailing after two, they've only won one game or something like that. The record is, I mean,
the Jets after the first period, Jets are leading after the first period, the Jets are 9-2 this season.
Okay, so I said one, but yeah. So they've only lost two games.
And the Carolina Hurricanes, 0-10 when trailing after the first period.
And I think Evander Kane has like 6 first period goals this year. He scored the first goal in 5 games or something. So I think it paces the Jets. I think they're really a team more so than other teams. I know I might be stressing this a little bit too much, because most teams will have a winning record when they score or are leading after one.
You're not wrong,
though. I think the Jets must be up there.
The Jets have scored 78 goals this season so far.
Right.
33 of those goals have been in the first period, which puts them second in the NHL behind Philadelphia, who've scored 35 first-period goals. The Jets are a fast-starting team, and when you start off fast, it usually will lead to success.
And they're starting to hold those leads, which they weren't doing earlier in the season. And it might be a little bit frustrating for Jets fans to hear, especially Coach Claude Noel talking about that, but it really has been the difference between this team in the first 13 or 14 games and the last 13 or 14 games, especially at home. They're getting off to the lead, and they're not, you could say that especially this past homestand, they're not sitting on a lead. They had to do that a little bit at the beginning of the homestand, maybe against Phoenix, but
Phoenix plays a different style. That's right. All. I mean, the irony of the Jets getting this early 2-0 lead last night is that after the the Jets scored 34 seconds in, and then in the time between their first and second goals, I thought Carolina probably controlled most of the play. Couldn't end up doing anything. The Jets come out on that rush and they make it 2-0. But I thought for the first 2 minutes or so after that first goal by the Jets, Carolina really took the play to them. There was that long sequence where Carolina was able to keep the puck in the Jets' end.
Carolina didn't have a lot of guys who could capitalize on chances, and so any time they sustained pressure, their lack of talent was clearly on display, to me at least.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina was controlling the puck. They were controlling it on the edges, so they weren't getting really in good scoring opportunity, but they're still controlling.
That's by design by the Jets, too. They just protect the middle. They protect the house, as they say, as the players say, and they let whatever be on the outside. They don't mind the shots from the outside. Many coaches... Noel obviously wants to make sure that if you notice it, and sometimes you'll notice if you're watching the game, you think to yourself, are the Jets on the penalty kill here?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that. It's that they just dropped five guys between the dots and below the ringette line, really. And they just say, okay, try and get it through the house. Try and get it through here. And teams can't. And it's maybe not the most aesthetically pleasing style of play, but it works, and especially for this team when they're scoring first.
That's right. And it allows them to really get the transition game going when they're keeping everything to the outside.
Yeah, Drew, and it limits your chances, and then you make other teams take risks. And if they take risks, openings happen, and you can transition with your speed.
Exactly. Jets made it 4-0 before the second period was over. Tim Stapleton scored on a power play.
Yep.
His third goal of the year with assists coming to Kyle Wellwood and Dustin Byfuglien. That was during the flurry.
Made it 3-0, you mean?
Pardon me, 3-0, yeah. That was during the flurry of penalties. Carolina took three penalties in under a 2-minute span, so the Jets had a power play. Tim Stapleton from the point just blasted the goal past Cam Ward. No chance at all for Ward.
And I just wanted to throw in there, right before that goal was scored, because that was, I believe, on a 5-on-3, right?
That's right.
Yeah, 4-on-3.
Right before, and you guys know how much I love Chris Mason, right before that, they gave up a shorthanded breakaway to Patrick Dwyer. And
Anthony Stewart.
No,
they were back-to-back. It was Anthony Stewart and... Anthony Stewart's was a clear breakaway. Patrick Dwyer's was a bit of a quasi-breakaway.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on in the press box. And, Richie, I appreciate you saying that, because I did miss the Anthony Stewart breakaway. There was two consecutive breakaways, and we were talking about that last night after the game. And there was the Anthony Stewart breakaway that Mason saved, and then the shorthanded one from Dwyer. And then right shortly after that, Stapleton scored. And I'm the type of guy that I guess maybe I look too much for a TSN turning point, Drew, but to me that was huge because he made the save. That would have been a backbreaker if they would have let up a shorthanded goal to make it 2-1, especially,
It would have given Carolina life.
Right.
And the Jets did a good job, and obviously, I mean, not Carolina never did get that life in this game.
Yeah, they had a little bit in the third period, but it was way too late.
They were down 4-0 at that point in time. If you can't hold a 4-0 lead on home ice, then you got other serious problems. Brian Little followed up on Tim Stapleton's goal just over a minute later with his 9th of the season, assist to Evander Kane and Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler, 3 assists in last night's game. Let's head to commercial break. We're right up against it. Let's go to commercial. When we come back on the other side, I want to talk about Blake Wheeler and his game last night and his game against Boston. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. Jets Red Wings, 6 o'clock puck drop tonight with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty. Rick Ralph has the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5. Hessler and Law will follow us at 3 o'clock. I want to talk about Blake Wheeler. Two straight games. He was really the target for a lot of animus from some Jets fans earlier this year with the slow start.
Hold on, I just have to look animus up on Webster Urban Online Dictionary, Drew.
On Friendster.
Since I thought the last two games, the Boston game, he came out, I thought he had a very good jump to it, a jump to his step in the Boston game. And then last night, I thought he sort of carried over that energy. Do you think Blake Wheeler's sort of, quote-unquote, turning it around or turning it on at this point?
Or turning the corner? Or turning it up?
I think, to some extent...
I think I've made my point.
To some extent, he is, Drew. But also, I say that I think to some extent he's also getting some bounces. and benefiting from the play of his line mates as well. I think he has gained confidence, though. I mean, I think that's one of the factors here. But also, I really do think that playing with these guys beside him, the guys who will capitalize on chances, as opposed to maybe some of the other guys he was playing with before, also makes him look better. But I do think his game has improved. I don't think it's a drastic change,
no,
as some may think. And as I widen my hands from one
we're on radio, though. No, people can't see that.
Well, you always describe everybody as one pendulum to another. I think that he's improved his game, but I don't think it's as significant as people may think.
I agree with Richie, as I usually do, because Richie is someone that I look to for insight.
Guidance?
And guidance.
Okay.
I think a lot of people have been, I think a lot of people have been hard on Blake Wheeler, and he was struggling, and he only has a few goals, 3 goals, I think, now. And he wasn't doing very well. And the Ladd Little Wheeler line, Richie, wasn't doing well at all. And that's why it was broken up. And now the top line is Kane, Little, and Wheeler. And he is benefiting from playing with Evander Kane, no doubt. But he's playing with more confidence. And it hasn't been that drastic. He's playing better. And he's been a streaky scorer. I think that people, looked at Wheeler signing that 2-year contract at the beginning of the year and the fact that he finished the season well with Atlanta, in that he was going to evolve quickly into a top-line right winger. And he is on the Jets because the Jets are not strong on the wings.
Right.
But he's playing better, and he's doing what he needs to do. Blake Wheeler is the type of guy that he's not always going to be able to do those crazy outside-inside rushes and go to the net. But he should be going to the net. But realistically, he's feeding off of the play of his line mates, and good for him. I mean, he's doing better.
So much space with the speed. I mean, he's a good skater too. Yeah. The speed of Kane
allows him to have more room, definitely.
Yeah, so they have a lot more room, and the defense don't key on him. I still think he takes a little bit of extra time to make decisions, and I don't think that's going to change. I don't think you're going to fundamentally change him as a player. And I think the people have to understand something.
Yeah.
You can't say anymore, what if he decides to use his size, or what if he does...
Not
he
that
is
type of player.
What he is. Yeah. He's not going to change. He's been in the league for many years now. He is what he is. So don't say, if only he this, if only he that. He's not 19. It's not suddenly going to transform himself. He is a player who's, close to UFA status now, a couple years away.
Proverbial old dog.
He's in his prime years, but I mean, he's become what the player he is, and you can't suddenly change that. And I think people need to realize that. So stop looking at what Blake Wheeler can't do and look at what Blake Wheeler can do.
Yeah, and I think that what might be added to that is, and I'm not taking anything away from Andrew Ladd, it's Evander Kane is just a much quicker, more offensively talented player, and he's made Brian Little and Blake Wheeler better. Brian Little, and I'm not taking away anything from Little or Wheeler, but Evander Kane is just an immense talent. You watch what he does on the ice, and it's incredible. Gary Lawless had a really good article in the paper, talking about what Evander Kane can become, and before the season, a lot of the keys to the Jets were, can Evander Kane develop into a 30-goal, 60-65 point guy? Can Pavlik play 65 games? And I think the answer to both of those is yes, Drew. I think Kane's easily going to get 30 goals. He might get 40. And Pavlik is playing, 9 out of every 10 games right now, right? So I think Richie's right. I think Wheeler is a very solid forward, but he's the way I look at it. People I think are looking at Blake Wheeler and they want him to become Keith Primo.
That's right.
He's not Keith Primo because he's not as physical and he's not as offensively talented. Very solid player, and I think he's the type of guy that benefits from playing with better players. And I mean, I guess you could say anybody does, but I think with more so with him, he really benefits from a speedy winger like Kane.
Let me ask this question. Nick Antropov is shortly to return to the Winnipeg Jets lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tonight. If not tonight, I think we would say it's going to be Tuesday against Minnesota. How do you see Nick Antropov's return affecting the Winnipeg Jets' forward lines?
I mean, in a positive way, Drew. How would I change it is what you're asking?
Yeah, where would you play him? Is he going back with Burmistrov? What's happening with Wellwood? What's happening with Ladd?
Yeah, if I were them, I would put Antropov on the right wing, put him with Burmistrov and Ladd, see how that works. I like Burmistrov in the middle.
Yep.
Because you want to, I think it's a development process. Now you're going to get caught up here in the playoffs or development. And you can do some of them at the same time, but you can also, try and win at the expense of maybe development. And I think that ideally you kind of want to do both. You want to put Burmistrov in the middle. I'd say Antropov on the right side, and I'd put,
I'd put Ladd on the left. I mean, Wellwood is what he is, guys. Again, I've gone on and on about, yep. You know, he brings nice attributes to the table, but he's people that need to take it easy on what his value is here. You drop him down, and maybe sometimes you throw him onto the GSD line, although that hurts the forecheck. Or you throw him, and you make a nice fourth line, and if you want to throw him the second power play unit, you do that too. But I that's what I would do. I don't think there's a question. I wouldn't move Burmistrov down. And then that,
no.
At what point are you talking about trying to get better or trying to see what you have?
Well, I mean, that's what just did about, you know, I watched Kyle Wellwood closely last, you know, 2 weeks, let's say.
Yep.
And that line, that Burmistrov, Ladd, and Wellwood line, I've never seen, I mean, I know he is what he is with Kyle, you know, you just said it about Blake Wheeler, and it's very true with Kyle Wellwood. I've never seen a guy who really does shy away from contact as much as he does. What, in a five-on-five situation, you're almost playing a man short with him out on the ice.
But guys,
unless the puck is unless the play is, you know, involving a soft-handed play right in front of the net. But how many of those actually happen in five-on-five situations?
I'm playing a man down, Drew, but I do think that he, he's limited. And I think that he, what he does is, with his limited skill set, I do agree with you. To the
doesn't shoot.
It limits the other players in terms of what Ladd has available to him as an outlet, as he and what Burmistrov, especially with Burmistrov, and we've talked about this before, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, Burmistrov and Wellwood together, both don't shoot.
Well,
so where's your danger? Well, you know, defensemen can totally play off of you, they can totally cheat, and they know Ladd's going to be the guy shooting the puck, and if not, Burmistrov and Wellwood will be shooting, not the best shots, and the goalie can generally handle those shots. So you can trust your goalie to do that, and Ladd has a good shot, not a great shot, so where's the scoring coming from, and where's the separation, and where's the boards play? Burmistrov's actually very good on the boards.
Very good on the boards.
So Antropov and Burmistrov on the boards together with Ladd might be a good combination.
Count the number of times in the last 2 weeks that line has had the puck really in a good scoring position, in a good shooting opportunity, that they have not taken that shot.
Many times.
I mean, honest to God, Kyle Wellwood might be the nicest guy in the world. I really don't know. I have nothing against him personally. I think he is so limited as a player that he's hurting the team by having him in that role right now.
Kyle Wellwood has slowed down a lot lately, and the problem is, Richie, now that the number one line has been established, it becomes a numbers game on the wings. I think you can't bury Burmistrov on a third or fourth line. It becomes, the way I look at it, now the Jets are kind of having set lines. The GST line's been there all year, and you might be moving guys around in the third or fourth line, but really, Slater and Glass play together, and I thought Glass was phenomenal again last night. Great on the penalty kill and everything. Slater won,
win
80% of his faceoffs?
Yeah.
So now that you have that number one line established, It's basically between Burmistrov and Wellwood on your second line, because Ladd is a mainstay on the second line. So you have to play the guy that is the future of the second line, really, in Burmistrov,
right.
And he's better than Wellwood. And so you are better on the forecheck, and I think better offensively, even though he's only 19 or 20 years old.
So
Wellwood has to be the guy that comes down on the third or fourth line.
On your third and fourth lines, you want those lines to be really energy lines with a good forecheck. Would you agree with that comment?
Which is an argument towards having Burmistrov, Ladd, and Antropov in the second line.
I'm saying, what role does Wellwood play? He's not going to forecheck. He's not going to do the dirty work.
You can also drop him into the fourth line and play him against other teams' fourth lines, where he can certainly take advantage because he has a above-average skill set.
And Richie, even if he's on the fourth line, he'll still get his second power play unit time.
Let's go back to how you utilize him on a good team. He's played on two good teams the past 2 years who haven't retained him, Vancouver and San Jose.
Yep.
Okay. Remember that Kyle Wellwood wasn't signed by anybody in September, so anybody who wants him on the top two lines, I think, is fooling themselves. On a good team, which the Jets aren't yet a very good team, they've played really well, he is a fourth line player who can win some faceoffs, who can create some offense, and maybe fill in on the power play.
He's a power play. He's a power play.
That's what he is.
Hands
so.
Guy. That his. You're right, Rich. I mean, and Drew, you've said this too. I mean, the thing with Kyle Wellwood is it's noticeable. I mean, with his physical presence, and I think that and it's just reality. Now that the Jets are playing better, and like I said, now that they're getting really good play from their top line, and they're really pacing the team offensively, that's just the way it is. Because Wellwood doesn't play a physical game and doesn't have a very good shot, that's just the way it is. I mean, earlier on in the season, Wellwood was getting that ice time because guys like Little and Wheeler and Kane weren't going, right?
Yeah.
Really, you could look at it like that. And now that those guys are going, well, and Antropov's going to be back, and Ladd has moved from the first to the second line, unfortunately, Wellwood has to, he's the odd man out.
I think he's not, it's not unfortunate. I think he's the odd man out just because his skill set dictates that he's the odd man out.
Yeah.
I mean, I like what you're saying about him in a fourth line because he's more skilled than other fourth line opponents that he'd be playing against typically.
We said that from the beginning though.
Yeah. But I mean, right now, I mean, it's amazing how that line, he just doesn't shoot. Ever.
Basically, guys, it'll be,
why doesn't he have a good shot? If you don't have a good shot as an
NHLer,
upper
body strength, lower body strength,
is it something you just haven't worked on to develop?
I mean, some guys have better natural shots than others, but yeah, I would say that a lot of players seem to work on their strengths more than work on their weaknesses.
But he has to work on it. I mean, he's a
if he was stronger, if he got stronger, could his shot improve?
I mean, it's also technique, Drew. And,
right.
I think he also prefers to peak.
Also, that's another point, Drew, and players, guys listening to the show right now who play hockey will realize that when you use a really short stick like Wellwood does and you like to dangle, it does hinder your ability to put power behind your shot.
At some point in time, it's going to cost him money, though. You know, you have to make your game more well-rounded.
Drew, you're talking about a late 20s hockey player.
Well, I'm saying he's so one-dimensional. It's amazing to see.
That's why he was available in September. What do you want him to be?
I understand that. I'm just saying... I'm saying, personally, I did not realize how one-dimensional he was until I've seen him the last 2 weeks.
Generally, when you have 30 GMs who don't sign a guy before September, that'd be a red flag.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just commenting.
Nobody signed me, Richie.
There's a red flag.
Well, I thought somebody had picked me up. Well, I guess you guys picked me up.
That's like the red flag. That's like 30
Actually, Rack picked me up. Rack signed me to the big contract. The 1 year, 10 bags of popcorn per week contract.
On that note, let's head to commercial break. When we come
Gabe's
back,
Gabe's coming up, Drew.
On the other side of the break, Gabe Desjardins, our good friend, is going to join us. You're listening to Buick Chevrolet, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 12:30 in the afternoon on TSN 1290, Buick Chevrolet, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day, puck drop between the Jets Red Wings, 6 o'clock tonight.
Once again, Drew, I'm happy that you have to say that. Chevrolet, what is it?
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. It's the first time we've had one of those game days on a Saturday, I think, so I'm not used to saying that.
Chevrolet Buick GMC
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day.
Wow.
You got it?
No.
Okay, don't worry about it then. How about that? If you don't have to worry about it, then we're good.
I drive a Hyundai. What do I know?
Exactly. Let's go to our good friend Gabe Desjardins. He's going to join us on the phone line live from, I believe, San Francisco. Gabe, how are you this morning?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
Doing very well, thank you.
Gabe, what kind of car do you drive?
Honda.
Nice. Good cars.
Yeah. Very solid. 8 years old.
Are you surprised at all by Ezzy anymore?
No. How could I even possibly be surprised?
I don't know. I'm just making sure you're not. Gabe, let's talk about our Winnipeg Jets first and foremost as we sort of delve into some of the numbers game that the NHL has nowadays. Simple question. What are the Jets' underlying numbers, you know, statistically and using the advanced stats that you specialize in? What do the Jets' underlying numbers say about this team?
Well, I mean, I got to admit, I'm a little bit surprised, but the numbers say that the Jets are right around the middle of the league, you know, kind of right on the margins of being a playoff team. Definitely a team that I would expect to lose in the first round of the playoffs, but a playoff team nonetheless, which I think is a lot better than a lot of us expected them to do this season.
Gabe, we have a question. I have a couple questions for you. I want to ask you a first question. You know, that's about a stat, and I know that a lot of stats out there are misleading. The Jets right now, after yesterday's win, last night's win, they've got a goal differential of -4, which is obviously the difference between goals for and goals against. And the best goal differential in the league is +33, Boston Bruins. Do you think that stat says a lot about a team, or do you think it's a mediocre stat?
Well, at the beginning of the season or 30 games into the season, it doesn't necessarily tell you a whole lot about a team because, you know, you can find Phoenix leading the Pacific Division with a +4 goal differential, not substantially different than the Jets.
Right.
Or, you know, Toronto is, you know, thinking playoffs even though they're, you know, -3. So it's hard to use goal differential as a convincing indicator of how things are going to go forward. What you really want to look at this early in the season is shot totals. And there the Jets are roughly in the same situation. They're actually a little bit above zero on their shot differential. So they're even slightly better, I think, than that minus four might indicate.
Gabe, yesterday the Montreal Canadiens and the Carolina Hurricanes made a deal swapping defensemen. Jaroslav Spachek went to Carolina. Thomas Cabrera went to Montreal. What do you think of that trade? Who do you think won that trade?
Well, one of the things I think is pretty interesting, and we don't necessarily get a lot of insight into this unless we spend a lot of time reading the French papers and watching hockey in French, is that, I don't know, I think Montreal people just, they live in an alternate universe where they're not as affected by the information that gets out to the rest of the league. I had a chance to sit in the press box with the RDS guys last week, and they spend a lot of time following this team. They hang on its every move, its every up and down, because there's no other team. The Senators are not going to be Quebec's second team, and they're very invested in the conventional wisdom, that Montreal is a mediocre team at even strength, that they have a terrible power play, and this is a move that attempts to solve that problem. Whereas I'm not convinced that's really the issue. I think Montreal's power play is fine, and they're focusing a little too hard on short-term goal scoring, which is not the best indicator of how they're going to be going forward.
I thought all of Montreal's problems were because of Perry Pern.
And then they haven't gotten any better since he left. So, we could apply a little statistical analysis to that and say that Pern likely was not the problem.
That's why you have the PhD.
PhD. No. That's way too much school for me. At any rate, in terms of who won this trade, Carolina, it's an admission that they're going nowhere this year, that they're going to be worse than last year, and I think worse than expectations. And it's always problematic to be dumping a player, even if it's good to get the salary off the books, it's always problematic to be dumping a player that you signed to a multi-year contract this early in that contract. Did Montreal has the cap space, Montreal has the money. Montreal could always hide Thomas Cabrera in the minors if they need to. So Montreal, I don't think, lost out in this deal. Carolina, probably there's no, it's neither good nor bad, although it just shows that they're giving up. So I think Montreal should be adequately happy with this deal, knowing that if Cabrera blows up in the next 2 years, they can it won't hurt their team.
Gabe, the Jets face off against the Red Wings tonight, but the next home game is against the Minnesota Wild, who have, I guess, surprised some people by being atop the Western Conference standings. Can you give us kind of the breakdown on this team and whether they are, quote unquote, for real?
Well, I look back 3 years, and Minnesota was terrible, and they didn't make the playoffs. And I go back 2 years, and Minnesota was terrible, and they didn't make the playoffs. And I go back to last year, and it was the same story. And Minnesota didn't make any moves in the offseason that would have convinced anybody that they were getting better. And certainly didn't make any moves in the offseason that would have convinced you that they'd be the best team in the league. So what is there that makes us think that they're actually better? And Minnesota has not been any better at playing fundamental hockey this year compared to last year, or even the previous 2 years before that. All they're getting is phenomenal goaltending outcomes from their goalie pairing. And if this continues, it would be by far the best goaltender performance since the lockout, and probably the best goaltending performance we've seen, even better than any Dominic Hasek season. So what are the odds of that? It's pretty low. I don't think if something happens and you wouldn't have predicted that it would have happened before the season started, you've got to use that information in your future decision-making. You've got to assume that Minnesota is going to start crashing hard at some point. They don't have. I made a prediction, I think, the night before Columbus came in and beat the Jets, that Columbus wasn't really a particularly bad team, and that their underlying numbers actually looked better than Minnesota. And since then, Minnesota has barely had a positive goal differential, but they somehow eked out a whole bunch of wins, a lot of one goal wins. So I think things have been rolling really nicely for them, but it's not something I would expect to continue in the future.
You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by our resident statistical expert, Gabe Desjardins. Gabe, as we documented on last week's show, there were numerous coaches that were let go and hired in a number of different locales throughout the NHL. What do your numbers tell us about teams that fire their coach mid-season and how that bodes well for their future success that year?
Well, I think this isn't going to surprise you, but firing your coach makes you about 1 point better on average. So the impact is inconsequential. But where there is impact is in the general manager's job security, because every time the general manager is able to force off some of his own failures in building the team onto somebody else in the organization, mm-hmm. that's something that plays well with the press, probably plays well with his bosses, and lets him hang on. And I think we underestimate the importance of things like that, of making decisions at the executive level that are defensible to the press and to ownership. And even if there isn't an impact on the ice, what can happen is that when things do go well, the GM gets to claim credit for it. And when things go poorly, it can still get blamed on the coaching staff and you can fire again. And so it buys you another year or two of time at the helm of the team.
Gabe, GM that generally does a very good job with his spending, maybe properly would be one way of putting it. David Poile signed Pekka Rinne to a huge extension, about $7 million a year. And Nashville, right now, as it stands, is the second lowest spending team in the National Hockey League in terms of cap pick. Can you talk about that contract and the ramifications of that and your overall thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'd like to turn the question back around on you guys, and I'm sure you've talked about it at length. But if you could pick, if you had Weber, Suter, and Pekka Rinne, and you could only sign two of them to massive long-term contracts, who would you pick? And I think the answer is obvious.
Yeah.
That you'd go with Weber and Suter.
I was going to vote Ezzie.
Vote for Ezzie?
Yeah.
I don't. Isn't he a little old?
Yeah, he's a little bit old, and he plays defense, but he's got a bad knee. So I'd probably bank on Suter and Weber.
And I'm extremely overweight.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that was acceptable in the 80s, but now I don't think it'll work out.
Yeah, back in the days of Vladimir Krutov, Gabe.
Yeah, well, hey, I mean, do you think you and Kachuk could go toe-to-toe at a buffet?
I think I would get dominated by Keith Kachuk. I saw him when... was it the Blues were in town? No, the Blues
haven't been in town.
Yeah.
Anyways, go
on.
He was at
one of the games, and he wasn't looking svelte, I'll say that much.
But, Gabe, back to that point, I think that, spending the money, now, as far as we can tell, they only have so much money to go around in Nashville. I mean, that's probably the basis of that you were just speaking about it. Are Weber and Suter, are you signing Rinne? One argument is out there, maybe put it this way, that they need to sign Rinne to prove to Weber and Suter that they can do that. But then, in that sense, don't they just lock up too much money in all three of them and don't have any money for forwards?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that Rinne is not worth the money that was spent on him. Weber and Suter likely will be, but goaltenders are, and I'm not exaggerating here, really a dime a dozen. And so spending all this money on Rinne just did not make sense, given Nashville's limited budget, given any team's limited budget. It just does not, as it did not in Philadelphia, make sense to throw so much money at a goaltender when you can go cheap like they did in Phoenix and save your money for other positions where it's better spent.
Gabe, we wanted to get your thoughts on NHL realignment. That was the big news that came out earlier this week at the Board of Governors meetings down south. And it was agreed that the NHL will be moving to four conferences away from six divisions and two conferences. The Jets obviously in a division with Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, Columbus, Minnesota. I think I missed a team there. Seven teams.
Eight-team division.
Oh, sorry, eight teams. But they haven't agreed on what the playoff format will be, and there's been some talk that there will be some reseeding. As far as yourself goes, what do you think they should do with the playoffs? Do you think it makes sense to maybe award teams with more points by reseeding the teams? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, for me, what I'd like to see is really no conference structure. That you have any possible matchup in the playoffs. We've changed the divisions and the conferences around so much that mm-hmm. I don't think we'll ever be able to have the Battle of Alberta. That we once had, or the Montreal Quebec battle. So I'd just like to see the best possible hockey and have the best possible teams in the semifinals and the finals. I'm a little bit disappointed by the realignment because I really did think that it was great having Winnipeg's natural Floridian rival in the same division with them.
Okay, one other question about that, about the realignment. Are you surprised at all that ownership of, you know, 16 teams, I guess, would give up about a 7% chance of making the playoffs as opposed to the other divisions that have 7 teams and the 2 that have 8?
Well, what does this point to? Does this point to future expansion or future contraction? I don't know that there were a lot of choices. Any division that you constructed, there was still going to be an issue. Some, you know, Dallas was still going to be complaining, and I think that teams are much more concerned about the cost associated with travel and the cost associated with marketing themselves when they're playing teams they don't have a natural rivalry with, and the lost revenue from a 4-and-out playoff loss is likely less than all those other issues.
Gabe, we're going to let you go on this one last question. It comes to us actually via Twitter. Jim Sabo 21 tweets at us and says to ask you why Chris Thorburn has the third worst Corsi rating in the entire league, while Glass and Slater all have a decent Corsi, given that they're all on the same line together for the most part.
Really? That's a good question. I mean, this just shows, you know, that you've really developed a fan base for the Winnipeg Jets if somebody cares about Chris Thorburn's outcomes.
There you go.
So,
how about we table that question and you can send us an email and we'll get back to the listener with the answer to that. How about that?
Yeah, no doubt. So hey, let me give a little plug for my site before you let me go here.
Attaboy.
We got the Arctic Ice Hockey Winnipeg Jets blog, and what we're running right now is a holiday Jets contest. We have wonderful prizes. First prize in this contest is an Upper Deck commemorative Jets hockey card set, and all you have to do to win this contest is pick the outcomes in 5 Jets games from December 13th through the 23rd. So send me your entries, $5 to enter.
Sounds like a good deal. And they can find that where? ArcticIceHockey.com?
Yes, exactly, ArcticIceHockey.com.
Dave, you don't have some type of payment plan, do you?
Yeah, you could go $1 a month if you want, or if you win the prize, you know, I could probably find a way to give you a crappier prize.
There you go. You're not having the old
1991-92 Parkhurst set or something like that.
I got some crumpled up OPGs from '82 that were in my bike tires.
Give me the gum from the old
the old baseball cards. Yeah. That gum disintegrated in your mouth.
You know what you guys should do? You should have Eddie buy some of those vintage cards. They're probably like $100 a pack, and then eat the gum on the air.
That's actually not the worst idea you've ever had, I got to tell you.
Drew would love that.
I would love that. Gabe Desjardins from Arctic Ice Hockey, thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Gabe.
Peace in the Middle East, Gabe.
You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Gabe Desjardins from Behind the Net Hockey and Arctic Ice Hockey. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. If you don't have your New Year's Eve plans yet, give Rumors a call, 488-4520. They have a fabulous New Year's Eve lineup coming up, so you can go ahead there and laugh your bleep off on New Year's Eve, as they do like to say.
Can I call Sheldon personally? Sheldon Mandel, can I call him to make my New Year's Eve plans?
No. He wants nothing to do with you.
Okay.
Zero. In fact, he would probably prefer you not even mention him.
Sheldon and I had a really good time on the New York trip. I don't know what you're talking about. Me and your dad get along very well.
That's nice.
Drew, can I just say something a little bit off topic here? I know that we have a quick...
It'd be more surprising if you said something on topic.
we have a... This is going to be a quick segment, I know, but I just want to clear the air because something was talked about on the Big Show, and as we mentioned on last week's show, Drew and I will be, you know, appearing on the Big Show, I believe, the 26th to the 30th. Is that correct?
26th is Boxing Day, as we've talked about a number of times now. No, we are not on the 26th.
Because me and you will be, will be shopping at Best Buy for a flat screen. Okay. But we'll be on from the 27th to the 29th or something like that.
Oh, for God's sakes, the 27th through the 30th.
Okay, but you're not on for one of those shows. Dave Manuk's coming on. But anyways, we're going to be on hosting the Big Show. Jay and Troy Westwood are getting a much-deserved break, and Matt Leibel, obviously, is getting a break. But, you know, there was a little bit of a Twitter thing going on with the Diet Pepsi issue. And I want to clear the air here, and this is for Troy and Jay and Matt Leibel. Richie drinks all of the Diet Pepsi. In fact, Richie averages 3 Diet Pepsis per week. And
never had a Diet Pepsi in my life.
That's not true, and we've only been on for a week. I always drink Diet Coke. So I know Troy Westwood loves his Diet Pepsis, and we only have one vending machine. So I'd like to clear the air right now because, you know, we're going on the Big Show, and I love Troy, love Jay, love Matt. So I want to clear the air. Richie is the only one that drinks the Diet Pepsis. I always drink Diet Coke. And Drew only drinks Nest tea. So I think that clears the air. We don't want to have another war like we had a sandwich war with Gary and Hustler. And I won that war anyways because I ate all sandwiches at Meyer's Deli in one sitting. So I think we should just clear the air. The Jets are on a winning streak. It's all positive. Now you can continue, Drew.
Do I really have to after that? I mean, you know, was that really necessary? You sound so excited that you're going to be providing that.
Let's talk about the Red Wings lines tonight.
Why don't we do that? That's a novel idea. In fact, we have Bob Duff from the Windsor Star coming up in a few minutes to also help us preview the Red Wings-Jets game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big, you know, the Jets passed their test against Boston earlier this week.
Sure did.
But this is a whole different ball of gefilte, as they like to say. In that the Jets are on the second half of a back-to-back. They had to travel last night from Winnipeg to Detroit.
Yep.
Probably didn't get into Detroit until about 2 o'clock this morning.
Hopefully they set their alarms to Winnipeg time.
Yeah, probably Detroit time would be better. But a loaded Detroit Red Wings team, and the Jets are in tough tonight.
Well, their first line tonight, just we talked about, you know, we talk about the depth that they're playing against. Phoenix, not much offensive depth. Carolina, not much offensive depth. New Jersey, a top line, but not really much after that. And then Boston with depth, but obviously missing Tyler Seguin, gave the Jets a bit of an advantage. Tonight, there's no break in the lineup tonight. Detroit's first line tonight, as per Brian Munns. Munns the word. Pavel Datsyuk centering the first line with Franzen on his left, Bertuzzi on his right. So big guys, can skate, can do a number of things there. Second line, quote-unquote, Zetterberg in the middle with Filppula on his left. Filppula is playing wing this year. And Hudler on his right. Third line, Dan Cleary on the left side with Darren Helm, St. Andrews boy, and Connor on the right. And then fourth line, Drew Miller, Justin Abdelkader, and Thomas Holmstrom. And I'm just realizing
those are my kind of lines.
That's amazing fourth line. I'm just realizing, I don't know, I have to remember which way Connor shoots, but every other player on the Detroit forward group shoots left, which is interesting. Anyhow, their defense pairings, now this is where a little bit of a weakness as compared to last year. Lidstrom, obviously, you know, as the top line left defenseman, playing with Ian White this year, a Manitoba boy as well,
yeah,
but not Brian Rafalski. Second pairing is Cronwell and Erickson, and their third pairing is Kindle and Stewart. So that, and Jimmy Howard starting tonight. That's a deep team. That's a dangerous team. That's a good puck-moving defense. It's a good puck-moving offense. They can skate. They can take away your space. It's going to be a very big challenge for the Jets tonight. I'm very interested to see how this all pans out.
It's similar to how it was about 2 weeks ago. The Jets played Carolina on a Friday night, then they traveled to Boston on that Saturday. And if you recall that game, the Jets jumped out to an early 2-0 lead against the Bruins,
yep.
Weren't able to hold on, ended up losing 4-2.
Yep.
But after that game, nobody was too upset. Because the Jets, you know,
they were in the game.
Yep. And they justified their performance. And yeah, they lost, but they lost to a better opponent. Again, I think if the Jets get a similar sort of outcome tonight, most people would be pleased.
And Drew, this is the best team they've played from the West. They haven't played Chicago. But I think Detroit right now is playing better than Chicago. Not taking anything away from Chicago right now, but Detroit scored 5 goals in the first period against Phoenix, and Phoenix is a pretty tough team to do that
against. That's right.
And this year, many people said that they were going to take a step back, myself included. I'll you know, go on the record and say that, but they have not taken a step back. One of the hottest teams in the league right now, that first line, Datsyuk is
still amazing me with the way he distributes the puck. And Franzen is scoring a lot. I think he's a point a game in the last 10 games or something like that. So it's going to be a big challenge to go into Detroit the day after a huge four wins in four games at home streak for the Jets. And it's going to be a good game. I wouldn't be surprised if this game is pretty high scoring, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree with that, Izzy. Let's leave it there. You're going to hear that game tonight on TSN 1290. Puck drop at 6 o'clock with Brian Munns, Dennis Bayak, and Shane Knighty with Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. When we come back on the other side, from the Windsor Star, Bob Duff covers the Detroit Red Wings.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to you each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Let's welcome to the program a good friend of the show from the Windsor Star. He's Bob Duff. Bob, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Well, good to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us, usual. How are things with yourself?
Oh, you know, Christmas is here and I haven't done any shopping, so it's the usual hectic craziness.
Well, you know, you can convert to Judaism like the rest of us and you get a free pass on that one.
And then I got to buy everybody a dreidel, though, don't I?
They're really cheap nowadays. You're okay on that front.
I see Lewis Black has his own line of dreidels now.
That's, might as well commercialize everything while we're at it. Bob, let's start with the Red Wings. Pavel Datsyuk left the last Red Wings game in the second period. We've had reports that he's going to play tonight. Is that confirmed? Was it just precautionary, or is there really something amiss with Pavel Datsyuk?
Well, you never know 100% for certain with the Red Wings. Like a lot of teams, their injuries are shrouded in secrecy. But every indication they've given us is that he will play tonight. It's very similar to a situation a couple weeks back where Henrik Zetterberg left the morning skate the day of the game, and there was all kinds of speculation, and he said, "I'm playing." And then about a week later, Franzen didn't practice in the morning of a game, and he said the same thing, "I'm playing," and in both cases they played. So if you go by their track record, you'd expect Datsyuk would be playing.
Bob, you know, Brian Rafalski leaving in the offseason, surprise to some. The Red Wings have filled that slot with Ian White. Can you talk about, you know, how he's complemented Nicklas Lidström and maybe how he's replaced Brian Rafalski?
He hasn't been a bad player. There's no knock against Ian White to say he's not Brian Rafalski, but it certainly Rafalski's been missed. And I don't know that there was anybody in the game who made that outlet pass once they took the red line out better than Rafalski. I can't count how many times he would zip that puck up the middle and send somebody in on a breakaway. And they miss him, of course, on the power play as well. He worked so well with Lidström and at the back end of their top power play unit. And that's not to say Ian White has played poorly. I think he's done a fairly good job. But again, he's not Brian Rafalski. He's a good defenseman, but he's not a great defenseman.
Bob, we wanted to get your thoughts on Jakob Amazon Kindle. He's a guy that's played in almost every single game so far this year. He's averaging about 13.5 minutes per game. How do you think he's progressed in his first full-time year with the Red Wings?
I think he's made giant strides almost from the moment he got here. The first maybe 15, 20 games last season, he was tentative, he was uncertain. And then he seemed to find a level of confidence. His playmaking with the puck was a lot better. It seems like a lot of times with young defensemen, it takes them a certain amount of time to realize they have more time than they think they do. They don't have to make the panic plays with the puck, and they don't. And once they discover that, they seem to relax and become the player that they're capable of being. And he's just steadily grown since then, and to a point this year where they feel very safe and comfortable putting him on the ice, and I think they see him developing into a top four guy on this team not before long.
Bob, every year in the offseason and in the trade deadline, people ask, you know, when are the Red Wings going to upgrade their goaltending situation? Jimmy Howard, .930 save percentage, a 1.89 goals against average. He never seems to get the credit that he deserves. Everybody says, yes, but it's because of the defense. Well, the defense isn't as good this year as it was last year, so when is Jimmy Howard going to get the credit he does deserve?
Well, he doesn't even get it from the NHL, who left him off the All-Star ballot. I wonder what a guy's got to do. He's been among the leaders in wins the last 2 years. What's a guy got to do to get his name on the All-Star ballot? But I think people are starting to recognize this year that he is moving. I wouldn't say he's one of the elite goalies yet, because he still has to make that playoff run that kind of establishes a goalie as one of the elite ones. And I think that will come, because I got to admit myself, when he first came up, I wasn't sold on Jimmy Howard as the answer to the Red Wings goaltending future. But he has, like, much like with Kindle, each year he's gotten better and he's grown. And I think he was well served by that amount of time he had in the minors. He needed that, both from a physical standpoint to develop, and also from a mental standpoint. His level of competition now, his competitiveness and his desire is just so much more significant than it was when he first came up. And he wants to be the guy now. He wants that start every night, and the Wings want to play him every night, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. When they went through that 6-game losing streak earlier this year, if you'll go back and look at the scores, the only reason they were losing was because they couldn't put the puck in the net. Howard was brilliant for them every game.
Bob, Yuri Hudler went to the cage, obviously, for a little bit, came back, seems to have found his form of maybe a few years ago. Can you talk about how he's fitting in on the second line?
Yeah, he's finally starting to find it. It's taken him most of, pretty much since when he came back. Last year was just an unmitigated disaster for him. And this summer, he actually worked out with the same person who trains Georges St-Pierre, the UFC fighter, and he went through some pretty rigid physical conditioning throughout the summer months to get ready for this season, and it seems to finally be paying dividends. The biggest problem everyone, including the management of the team, seemed to have had with Hudler over the last year and a half is he just won't shoot the puck. He's always looking to pass. And I think they're finally getting the message through to him, if you shoot and establish within the other team's psyche that you will shoot the puck, then you'll suddenly find you've got more room to do what you want, because if they know you're going to pass every time, they're just going to take away the pass from you.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Jets Red Wings gets underway. Puck drop 6 p.m. tonight from Joe Louis Arena.
Bob, we talked about defense in Detroit already, and obviously they missed Brian Rafalski. He was a very good defenseman, and he was very good for them for many years, along with being very good for the New Jersey Devils. But they've still got Nicholas Lidstrom, and it seems like he hasn't missed a step. Is it possible that Lidstrom's going to play another 2 years, and do you see any signs that he's regressing at all?
Well, he does make the occasional mistake, which pretty much never happened before.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean, when you compare him to the rest of the defensemen in the league, he's still in that upper echelon. From what I've seen so far this year, I don't see any reason why he won't be one of the Norris finalists again this year. He's just solid, solid, solid every night. You almost think he's found the fountain of youth, because you just can't believe this guy's on the other side of 40 and just playing like he's always played.
Bob, this is fairly obscure, but just a question for you. I'm not sure if this has been talked about in Detroit. Is Ian White the only right-handed shot in the entire Detroit lineup?
I think he's not in the entire lineup, but he is among the defense, certainly. It was one of the reasons why they were interested in him, because they knew they needed a right-hand shot. And it certainly was one of the reasons why they were attracted to him.
You know, and another question, and this is a more of a touchy subject. Last season with Mike Babcock, assistant coach Brad McCrimmon, known very well, obviously, people in Manitoba, ended up going to the KHL and obviously was unfortunately killed in a tragic plane crash. Can you talk about, I guess, maybe any relationship you had with Brad McCrimmon, and also how Mike Babcock and the staff is dealing with the loss of a close friend?
Well, I knew Brad for a number of years, actually. Aging myself here to tell you, I actually was covering the team when Brad was a player with the Red Wings in the early 90s. So I've known him and his brother Kelly for quite a few years, and just salt of the earth people. You couldn't find better people. Brad came to the rink every day with a smile on his face and always had a positive outlook, and he always had time for everybody and just brightened everybody's day. And he's definitely missed around the room. I mean, they were going to obviously learn to live without him because he wasn't coming back to the staff this year, but they still imagined that they'd be talking to him and they would see him. I know for a guy like Nick Lidstrom, who was his first NHL defense partner was Brad McCrimmon. He took the loss very hard. He talked at length about how much McCrimmon had meant to his career and just the development. And he said, as a young European player, having McCrimmon on the ice with him, nobody would mess with Nick because they didn't want to have to deal with the man who was known as the Beast.
Bob, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about another Manitoban that plays for the Detroit Red Wings. That's Darren Helm. Going to be centering a line with Dan Cleary and with Chris Connor this evening. You know, what's Darren Helm really brought to the table for the Red Wings, since it seems like his role is sort of increasing year by year?
And he's kind of become their new Chris Draper. He's their top penalty killer, tremendous speed, just maybe even the fastest guy in the league. I know Jonathan Toews, who played youth hockey with and against Darren Helm, is convinced Darren's the fastest skater in the NHL. And just that speed makes so much happen. And much like Chris Draper, Darren just doesn't have the hands to go with the speed. He gets so many opportunities because of his speed, but he just doesn't finish them. And if he did finish them, obviously he wouldn't be playing on the checking line. He's kind of evolved into that role. I mean, you could see it from the moment he got to Detroit that, you know, this guy was going to be what Chris Draper was at that point. And he's getting there. His face-offs are still not on par with Draper, who was one of the best in the game. But I think he has shown steady progression. And the only thing that really I think the team thought maybe he would score a little bit more than he has, but so far that hasn't evolved.
Bob, this is the only meeting between the Jets and the Red Wings this year, but by the sounds of it, with NHL realignment proposed, it sounds like these two teams will get to know each other very much in the next years to come. The Red Wings supposedly were promised to go back into the Eastern Conference, what had been the Eastern Conference, but they seem to be happy with this new alignment. You know, what's the scuttlebutt around the team about the new opponents they're going to be playing on a regular basis?
Well, when I talked to Ken Holland about it, he said that, you know, in a perfect world, yeah, they wanted to be in the Eastern Conference. But when all the factors were taken into consideration, their own selfish interests plus the interests of the league as a whole, they accepted this as the best they were going to get. And they're pretty happy with it. Probably the two main concerns they had were, A, was travel, because basically right now they're playing almost half their games out of their own time zone. And, you know, an Eastern time zone team that's playing the majority of their road games in time zones that aren't Eastern, other than Columbus, there's nobody else in the West that's in the Eastern time zone. And that was a problem, A, because of the fatigue they felt it was taking and the toll it was taking on their team, and B, television revenue, because with so many games on 10:30, 9:30 at night, Ken Holland said it's hard to convince advertisers to jump on board the product because they know people aren't staying up on a weeknight at 10:30 to watch the Wings play in San Jose. So now that they're going to have more games at better times of night, they know they can generate more revenue from their TV product.
It just doesn't seem like it's going to be the playoffs unless the Detroit Red Wings are beating the Phoenix Coyotes in the first round, so that'll be something we'll have to get used to next year.
And losing to San Jose in the second round.
That's right. Well, we'll see about that. I didn't want to go there. Bob Duff from the Windsor Star, thanks for joining us this evening, or this afternoon, rather, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game this evening.
I will. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
Thank you.
That was Bob Duff. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick.
That's
GMC.
The third time, dude.
This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back on the other side of these important commercial messages.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. We just heard from Bob Duff of the Windsor Star. Previous to that, we heard from Gabe Desjardins. In case you missed any of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes along with the rest of this fine radio program. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey and Ezra Ginsberg.
Specifically, well, you guys aren't coming tonight because you apparently have better things to do. Remus and I will be at the Cheer tonight, so come say hi to us. We'll be on those
very comfortable couches that they've set up for us at the cheer, and join us, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Do you ever get, does the word sloth-like ever mean anything to you?
I love sloths. Is a sloth a real thing, or is it like a mythical creature?
Wikipedia. It's a real thing. It's not like a unicorn or something.
Unicorns are real.
Sloths are the six species of medium-sized mammals belonging to the families.
Well, I'm not medium-sized, so
I can't even say that word. So these are crazy dinosaurs.
Richie, what did you just buy, and are you currently drinking right now?
Diet Pepsi.
I rest my case.
Well, so we know who Troy and Jay and Maddie Libes can get mad at.
Tell Troy to stick with Cyclones.
Cyclone, you mean the ice cream bars up in the... We actually, Richie, I don't know if you're aware, but we traded Ezra for a few Cyclones. Ezra's now going to be a member of the Big Show, and we get some Cyclones as a result.
Oh, that's a great trade.
Yeah. I also had them throw in a box of Klondike bars.
What would you do for a Klondike bar?
I would trade you. I just did. That's exactly what I did. I traded you for a box of Klondike bars.
Let's talk
NHL realignment.
Let's talk a legal curve realignment.
Let's talk about our new divisional rivals, the Minnesota Wild, the Chicago Blackhawks.
Love it. Best division conference ever.
The St. Louis Blues, the Detroit Red Wings.
Okay, before we get into that.
The Columbus Blue Jackets, the Nashville Predators, and the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of bad teams in there, which is great. Before I get into that, I have to get this off my chest. I'm just really surprised that successful money-making owners, you guys have made millions, if not billions of dollars.
Like Drew.
Would give up a competitive advantage of 7% and decide that it's okay to have two conferences with 8 teams in them and then 2 with 7 in them with, as far as we know, no crossover proposal right now.
And it's important to put a caveat attached to this that, one, the playoff format has not been set in stone and will not be set in stone for another couple of months. And two, everything has to be approved by the NHL Players Association.
Which, by all indications, it's going to
that
be.
That one will be... I suspect there will be a crossover. I don't see how they cannot do a crossover.
Well, if you don't do... If it's not going to be a crossover, to me, it doesn't make any sense. Because...
The CFL does it.
Sure, the CFL does it. But the thing is, Drew, about this crossover is... I mean... You have to have a fair and balanced system. I'm talking about the 7%. Let me just quickly explain that. If you have an 8-team conference and 4 teams make it, you have a 50% chance of making the playoffs.
What?
If you're in a 17 conference and it's 4 teams make the playoffs still, you have a 57% chance. Why? Because of geographical location would you give up a 7% advantage?
Richie, when this realignment, when the Board of Governors approved the realignment, of course, you know, we obviously talk when we're not on the air about this, and you said it was ridiculous and you were a little bit surprised the owners agreed to this. And the way I looked at it, Detroit was the logical team that evens it out, right? Detroit goes to the East, mm-hmm. and then you have 15 and 15.
Right.
So why did the owners not agree to that? It was the big question. Because does that not solve the problem?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I just think that they pushed this through pretty quickly. I think something like this should be taken very seriously, and I think it was just Bettman wanted it. And he got his guys on board.
As Brian Burke said, it was a 1930 Chicago election.
But it was. And, I mean, that was taken, you know, we're making light of that. But what he's essentially saying is this is just all fixed beforehand.
Well, it should be. It's not a democracy. This is the commissioner who thinks he knows what's best for the league. And it's up to the owners to either agree or disagree with him. And as a good commissioner, he should know the votes he's got coming in.
How many governors had to agree to this?
20.
If you have 6 really good teams in one division, one conference, I keep saying conference, sorry, and there's, you know, 2 good teams in the other conference, and the 6 teams have to play each other all the time. You know, how is that fair?
Do we know, Richie?
But that currently happens, though.
That's why you should have a balanced schedule.
You're saying just really scrap the concept of divisions altogether in terms of scheduling?
Or
2 conferences.
Balance it out so you don't play 6 games in your own. I know they talk about travel. I mean, you can work around that. We talked about it. I talked about hustle or loss. If you're really that concerned about travel, then go to the 2-3-2 in the playoffs. I mean, if you want to save some cash there. This is the thing. I just don't like the fact that teams will be playing such different schedules than teams in other conferences, and some teams are going to get in that don't deserve to. And we have a team like Edmonton in 2006 that made it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals as the 8th seed. Are you going to limit a team's chance because of geographical location? I just don't think it's that well thought out. I don't think it's equitable. I don't mind the ideas behind it, but I just think that it needs a little bit more consideration. I mean, right now, as it stands, you have 4 conferences. We don't even know what that means. Like, where they stand beside each other. We don't know West, East.
What they're called.
This has basically been already agreed to. But yet, but we don't have a final. How can
there's
you
no
agree to it
format.
Without a final proposal yet? Like, there's nothing. It's not final.
They've agreed to the realignment. They haven't agreed to anything to do with playoffs yet.
But to agree to the realignment, you have to push through some sort of playoff. Shouldn't that be? Shouldn't somebody make a proposal that has everything included in it? We have. I mean, don't these people have a staff that puts something like this in place?
It's not, and Richie, it's, I agree with you.
The meeting was a day. I mean, when they went to Pebble Beach and they're back in like half an hour.
You're not just agreeing on the Jets, obviously, and we should mention this too, because it is important. The Jets, you know, Atlanta becoming the Winnipeg Jets, was one of the reasons for realignment. But they probably would have they've been talking about realignment.
The only reason they're realigning is because of the Jets.
Okay, well,
the only reason.
I think that they wanted to switch it before this, because I think Detroit was putting pressure to move into the East. But
they didn't move into the East, so they couldn't have been putting that much pressure.
It's well known they've wanted to. I'm just saying that I think Gary Bettman has considered realignment, and maybe the Jets were the reason for it, obviously. But I agree. I think that the way I look at it, they could have almost done two conferences, 15 and 15, and it would have made more sense.
I mean, I always had to break the current system. I'm not necessarily sure what's wrong with that system either.
I don't mind the interdivisional playoff rivalries, to be honest with you. I don't mind going back to that old format. I like, you know, people are saying, oh, well, this way you're never going to see a Leafs, Habs, Stanley Cup. Well, in the old format, you weren't going to see a Leafs, Habs, Stanley Cup either. So, I mean, or you're never going to see a Battle of Alberta Stanley Cup. Well, it was never an issue.
The league doesn't want that anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Of course the league doesn't want that, but you're never going to see that under the current format or any old format either.
Or you're not going to see a Crosby-Ovechkin conference finals or, you know.
People have to let that go a little
bit.
Or
if the Rangers are great, Washington's great, and Pittsburgh's great, you're going to see not three of those teams aren't making the second round, Drew.
Yeah, well, you know what? I agree with your point there. But
I just think that, like, you sit down, these guys sat in a meeting for basically like a day, and all these things were talked out? Really?
I don't think they were talked
out. That's the point. Just not like, you're a billion-dollar entity, and it feels like they make fly by the seat of their past decisions. Because Gary Bettman's in the mood to change things.
Then, I mean, he's the commissioner, and if they don't like it, then they can do something about it. But they choose not to, for whatever reason. They obviously seem to think that he's got some credibility and some weight behind his comments.
Somehow, David Stern's making Gary Bettman look smart, which is,
well, that's a whole separate issue altogether now, isn't it?
It is.
But I don't mind that you put a little bit more weight on the divisional rivalries in the playoffs. Yeah. Things are stale, as far as I was.
Are they?
Yeah, nothing, you know, it doesn't excite me.
Don't the best teams have to go through the best teams every year anyways? Isn't that kind of how it works? Like, isn't that how the conference system works, is that if the best teams will get to the later rounds?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, you would think so. Where were the playoff matchups?
Have the conference finals been that bad?
Where were the playoff matchups more memorable? You know, were they more memorable in the 2000s, or were they more memorable in the late 80s, early 90s?
Can I answer this question, Richie?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that hockey is exciting year after year after year, okay? And I want to make my argument here. I think I'm a huge hockey fan, okay?
But I hope so.
I can make the argument for someone who's a casual fan that maybe, like you, would want to see more rivalries. This is what I have to say, that yes, of course, rivalries are important, and there should be, hopefully there's 20 rivalries, Drew. Throw in as many rivalries as you can. I think that's great. But the people that are saying, I don't like this realignment, I think what Richie's saying is one thing. I think they didn't think this out enough, and I think there are some problems with this 7-8 thing. But
there's going to be two brutal conferences one year, and it's going to be the worst conference final or whatever the heck it's going to be called of all time.
I agree with that.
It's going to be two crazy divisions who are amazingly stacked, have to get through the first two rounds. They're going to play against a weak division, a weak conference, and they're going to play a brutal Stanley Cup final. Maybe they're too tired in the conference final. Maybe they're too tired and the Stanley Cup final is garbage. I just think, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I'm saying you need to take into account, Drew, what are you doing?
I'm telling you to slow down.
Okay.
I think you should speed up.
You need to take into account, like, these are all things to think about, and I just don't think they were all that well thought out. And I'm not saying it's the worst system ever. I'm saying there are flaws that I think need to be addressed, and I find it very odd that you can basically agree on a system that hasn't even yet been finalized.
I'm surprised.
We're going to work on the playoff system set up later. Really?
Let me ask you this.
We're going to talk to the players, see if they're okay with it. Why not working with the players to see what works best?
I'm surprised that you're surprised after all this time. You know that Gary Bettman really has a hammer and he runs roughshod. Whatever Gary wants, Gary gets. And it's been that way for at least a decade at this point in time. Why are you surprised at this point in time that, you know, things aren't thought out well?
And then he gets the I don't know. I mean, Is it the best system? I mean, are people in Winnipeg happy? I'm just playing devil's advocate here, too. Are people in Winnipeg happy they get to see Edmonton or Vancouver once a year as opposed to maybe twice a year, like the old system where they're playing teams twice in the conference? I mean, are people that excited to see Dallas, Nashville, St. Louis times a year?
I think on that point, I think you have a valid comment. I think that people in Winnipeg should see the other Canadian teams, the other Western Canadian teams, more than once per year. I think that, you're right. That, I think you have some validity to your point there. And I think that is a error in the inevitable scheduling with this new format.
I disagree. I think that it's simple geography. Winnipeg is a closer drive to Minneapolis. It's a closer drive to Chicago. And it's a closer drive to, well, specifically those two cities. And I don't know about the difference, but we're not gonna get
the best.
They're
not as concerned about travel as they say.
No, but they obviously are. This isn't the best of both worlds here. We're gonna get Detroit, an original six team. We're gonna get Chicago, an original six team. We're gonna get Minneapolis, which is the closest NHL city to Winnipeg. I think those are all positive. Yeah, we won't be in the same conference as Vancouver, Calgary, or Edmonton. And you know what? That would be great if we could play those teams more. But unfortunately, geographically, we're not. And I actually am not that upset about that. I think you're not good. If you were in the same conference as those teams, you wouldn't be in the same conference
as
Detroit and Chicago.
Well, season ticket guys are fighting over Dallas, Nashville, St. Louis games, of which there's going to be plenty.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck when all those games are sitting at the bottom because it's division games, but nobody cares.
I'll tell you what, the NFL, people will care. People will start
to
care.
You're a hockey fan.
You know,
you should like
it's not,
they're
it's
playing.
Not proximity. No, that, it's not proximity.
I can find something I like about Dallas. It's not me. I can watch Nashville play Columbus three games in a row.
I'll tell you
what,
if the Jets develop a hate on for the Dallas Stars, you won't care how close or how far Dallas is to Winnipeg. You'll care that they hate Dallas.
How will they develop that?
They play them six times a year. That's how you develop.
They play in-division teams six times right now.
And
there's no hate-ons.
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. If you add in playoffs where you might play them up to 10 times or 13 times a year, then there's hate. Then there's going to be hate.
We don't want hate, though.
Vancouver and Chicago hate each other. They're not in the same division.
But they played each other in the playoffs.
Yeah, and they naturally play each other because they're two good teams. They'll play each other in the playoffs.
Good teams will
find each other in the playoffs.
They will. I agree with you there.
Well, no, now they're going to be forced to play. So Vancouver and Chicago, which may be the top two teams in the league and be facing off for the conference final, are going to play in the first, probably the second round.
And Richie, that's what I wanted to say.
No, they play in the semifinals. They're going to reseed that. Vancouver and Chicago could be a Stanley Cup final. They're not in the same conference.
That's not going to happen either because Batman doesn't want two of the same time zone in the same.
Reseeded into the finals.
Apparently it might not now.
Well, I didn't hear that. I don't know where you heard that, but they
want to keep it east-west is what I heard.
Well, from what I understand, last I heard is that they're going to after you determine four conference winners, they're reseeding at that point in time. So if, you know,
it's not finalized.
I thought they care about travel.
Look, they care about travel. It's not the be-all and end-all, I don't think. They're not going to rig the league.
They care about travel.
They're not going to rig the league like they're doing in the NBA right now.
They care about travel, but then they don't care about, they care about travel. Right?
Yeah.
But then it gets down to the end of the season when these guys are dog tired and you're going to have these guys playing 6 hours apart.
But they would argue that they won't be as tired from the regular season because of the travel.
You're not going to do 2-3-2, you're going to do 2-2-1-1-1.
Look, I agree with your point that they probably could have thought it out a little bit more.
I think we've tossed out a lot of topics that probably wouldn't be able to be solved in one day.
And you're saying that the Board of Governors rushed into it again.
I think they rushed into it.
They probably did rush into it. I don't disagree with you there. I'm just saying I don't mind that it's a new format and they're trying something different.
Right, and Drew, back to what you asked Richie and I about whether or not...
I know you're a traditionalist.
We think that the playoffs are going to be just as good or was just as good as maybe 10 years ago. Ask people what they thought of Vancouver-Chicago in the first round and ask people what they'll think of similar teams that are really good going in the first round. I think hockey's always going to be good. When the playoffs start, no one's saying, oh, this is 1-8. Obviously, that impacts who you think who's going to win the series. As soon as the playoffs start, my opinion, every single series is good, even if it's a sweep. The playoffs are always good. So whatever they decide to do, as soon as the playoffs start,
what if the two best teams in the league end up in the same division? So there's two teams just get stacked, okay?
Conference,
sorry.
Call them whatever you want. Doesn't matter.
They just get stacked. You know, they get these crazy, you know, Edmonton gets stacked and somebody in Vancouver is stacked. They're going to have to go through each other, and you might like that. At some point, you might like that. But later on, you're not going to see always the best teams playing later on. And that's what I hate to see these guys meet in the first round because of the division matchups.
Well, the Jets, what year was it the Jets were the fourth best team in the league and they didn't get out of the first round? Because they have to play Edmonton.
Well, that's going to be a problem again.
Yeah, but you know
what? Talking about it's Rangers, Pittsburgh, and Washington this year. Those three teams can't make it out of the first round.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit different. You don't have a team like Edmonton anymore. You have good teams. No, I realize, but I don't think you're going to have an Edmonton again.
Even as the NHL, I mean, for the TV.
Look, they probably rushed into it. I don't mind that they're changing it up a little bit. And I think the caveat, the wild card call.
I'm not saying I hate it, by the way. I just want you to realize, I'm pointing out some of the flaws I see in it. And I think that, as you just mentioned, I think they've rushed into this. And I wonder if it was given the proper attention amongst everything else, especially with these governors are very busy, given the proper attention. And I also have to say, I find it very disconcerting, the selfish arguments that I heard. You know, I realize that people voted and Bettman, you know, moved his weight around a bit. The people on the East, the teams on the East Coast saying they didn't even want to travel to the West Coast. You have a greater good. There's a greater good here.
You're surprised that people are self. What dreamland are you living in, my friend?
I just think I think
I'm shocked that you think that you're shocked. The New York Rangers, one of your favorite teams,
back in the day,
you know, were one of the teams that voted against this, and you're surprised that they're selfish.
It's unbelievable.
Why? I don't know.
Well, James Dolan couldn't work himself out of a paper bag, so.
Well, then why? I'm surprised that you're surprised.
Must be a pretty big paper bag if you could fit a human being into a paper bag.
Let's go to break.
He's a big boy, too.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. Jets Red Wings puck drop 6 p.m. live on TSN 1290. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty get the play-by-play call. Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 o'clock. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked. Well done.
NHL news and notes.
Got to start with the big news from yesterday. We'll do this one as briefly as we can because I'm sure you've heard about it enough. That is the purchase of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment by both Bell Media and Rogers.
And Albert Pujols.
Albert Pujols, yes. And Albert Pujols. And Ezzy's offer of three turkeys fell a little bit short of being a successful bid, but it was close, Ezzy. You're in the running right up there until the end.
Yeah.
It's on its face. It makes sense.
Doesn't really matter to anybody outside of Toronto.
I know, that's why we're going to do this quickly.
Yeah. It's funny because nobody else matters to the rest of Toronto, so it kind of makes sense. It goes
You're
both ways.
Saying people
right?
outside of Toronto don't matter to
Winnipeg
Toronto?
Doesn't exist to people in Toronto. I'd like someone from Toronto to call in right now that isn't from Winnipeg and say that we exist. I don't even think Montreal exists. Anyways, continue on.
Thank you. Are you done?
I'm done.
For a couple minutes? Okay, at least that's all we ask. Anyways, they bought Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. They're going to share it. Everything is hunky-dory. Does this just not seem bizarre that this is going to work out?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... Yeah, I'm just very surprised by this, Drew. I don't necessarily...
Well, they're going to split radio rights, right?
Yeah, and they're going to share this down the line, and I'm sure there's going to be... basically, they just want a cut of the pie of the huge Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment entity, and I understand that from that perspective. It seems... I guess I'm surprised they're working together, but they've obviously... done their homework and think it can work. And obviously Larry Tannenbaum, was up in his stake and he'll have a significant role with the team.
Well, he's the kingmaker.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily see it changing, you know, practically speaking, changing anything that's happening with the Leafs or the Raptors.
As far as the ownership and the running of the team, I don't think it's going to change it at all. I mean, they already spend to the salary cap. They already, you know, have their management teams in place. I don't foresee that being the issue. I'd like to be a fly on the wall when they have to sit down and decide who gets the broadcast, who gets the radio rights for the first Leafs playoff game next year or something like that. Those are the conversations I'd like to be a part of.
Yeah, and you know, a good friend of our program, Eric Duhacek, Richie and I were talking about this before the show started, had a great article on the Globe and Mail, globeandmail.com, or pick up a newspaper, and he was writing about this, and he said, well, this is the line. I'll read it. The long history of the NHL, this is a quote from Duhacek's article, the long history of the NHL pre- and post-salary cap is that competently managed teams, I'm not competent, competently managed teams win or stay competitive year after year, and poorly managed teams struggle, no matter how much money Glenn Sather has at his disposal, making light of the fact that the Rangers haven't had much success. But basically what Duhatchuk is saying is, you know, ownership matters, but it's basically, you know, money being changing hands. Two massive companies, the two of the biggest companies, are taking ownership from another massive company. And what it's all about is Brian Burke's, you know, master plan. Is that going to really turn into something? Are the Raptors going to be able to rebuild their team?
It certainly can't be any worse than either of the jobs we've done right now.
Right.
It's fairly accurate. Toronto's playing better, but, I mean, it's not – Burke's Toronto career tenure so far hasn't been as – his finest moment. He hasn't done an awful job, but it hasn't been his finest moment. So I don't see it having an adverse effect on either team's ability to compete.
I would agree with you there. I don't think it's going to have much effect in the day-to-day operations. I think the behind-the-scenes machinations are far more interesting involving this deal than anything else in terms of on-ice product or on-court product or on-condominium product
or
whatever else they own.
Because we won't hear about it unless it doesn't.
That's true. If we don't, exactly. No news in this sense is good news for the rest of the world of hockey. Let's talk about Sidney Crosby. He's going to sit out the next two games as a precaution after he wasn't feeling well when he got hit in the game earlier this week. How nervous does this make you?
Pretty nervous. I mean, this is a difficult one to take because he got an elbow to the head, and apparently the test went fine, but he didn't feel fine, and whether that's,
a flaw in the testing.
or in his mind, whatever it may be, he doesn't feel right, Drew. I don't know how you rush this back. I don't know how he's going to play this way. I was under the impression that he was going to play a certain style until he got tested, and if he got tested and he was fine, he'd keep doing it. If he's playing that style now and he's getting tested and he's not reacting well, does this change the player he is? Does this change his effectiveness on the ice? Because he's an aggressive guy for a really good finesse player. He's extremely aggressive. He engages in contact and he doesn't want to back down. All very redeeming qualities.
And Richie, what Ray Shiro said, Penguins general manager, is that the doctor Mickey Collins, he passed this impact test and it showed no problems, but it's a precaution. But I think it's scary. I agree. I think if he can't. It's not like he took a Scott Stevens bone-crushing hit. He took an average hit here.
It was fairly innocuous-looking. Yeah, it wasn't anything.
It's something to be considered with Drew. If he can't handle that, if he has to sit out two full games, it's not like he's sitting out a practice series.
Let me ask you guys this question. Do you think after these two games, after he sits out these next two games, he's going to be back for that third game, or do you think this is going to linger?
I mean, why would they rush? They're a well-oiled machine. They can win without him, for the most part. Especially with Malkin in there and all their guys healthy, why would you rush him back for some random game in the middle of December? I mean, in reality, why would you? If you really want him for the playoffs, and first of all, his well-being is what matters most. Second of all, obviously, you want to make sure he's better for the stretch run. There's absolutely no reason to bring him back unless he's 100% healthy and has no concerns at all about his concussion.
And Richie, you don't think that Sidney Crosby, and I'm not just talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins or his doctors, you don't think Sidney Crosby has a guy like Mark Savard on his mind?
Yeah.
A guy that came back and then now
100%.
Mark Savard's career's over.
Yep.
Friday, December 23rd, Penguins at Jets.
Yeah.
Sidney Crosby in the lineup that game.
I'd say no right now.
Well, I mean, and this is all, and Richie, this is all our this is all
speculation.
Subjective.
100% speculation. I'm asking your opinion.
I mean, I don't want to give an opinion. I don't want to raise people's expectations. I don't want to lower people's expectations. That's the doctor's call. That's the team's call. The way things are going now, I would say it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So you don't buy two games and he'll be hunky-dory.
Well, how easy would it for two games to turn into six or eight games?
That's right. What happened last time?
Oh,
it was a year.
Absolutely. I agree with you both there on that end. And that's what makes it so scary. Let's go to a commercial break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, more NHL news and notes. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. 10 minutes before 2 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Jets Red Wings live from Joe Louis Arena gets underway at 6 p.m. tonight. Dennis Bayek, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty have the play-by-play. Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 p.m. And Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 p.m. I believe we have some NHL breaking news. Is that right?
Yep.
Maybe not. Maybe so. Hang on. I'm just double checking on this. Anyways, it's all good. We got it's unconfirmed reports at this point. Unconfirmed, I must stress, but it appears as though Andy Sutton may have been suspended 10 games by NHL disciplinarian Brendan Shanahan. If it is 10 games, your immediate thoughts on that, Richie?
It's deserved. I mean, Andy Sutton, it's careless. He jumped. He's 6'5" or 6'6" and jumps and lunges into a player, injures him, has a history of being a dirty player.
Are you an expert? You telling me you're an expert?
I don't get it.
Well, are you telling me what happened? Are you an expert? You know the interview, the Andy Sutton interview from, I think it was last year, remember?
That's right, good call.
When they asked, you gotta YouTube that.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, that's too much for me.
Maybe we'll find that for Rack and play it after our interview with Mike Greenlay, but no, I was joking around, because somebody asked Andy Sutton whether or not he thought he got his elbow up. I think that was last year, and he starts going to the reporter, "Are you an expert? Are you telling me what I did? Well, an expert?"
Andy Sutton.
Anyways, I'm going
to
stop doing that.
Yeah, Andy Sutton has a history of being a dirty player. You have to curb that, and you have to suspend him. I like the increased suspension. It creates a little bit more of a secure place for the players to play without goons like Andy Sutton running around and trying to take people's heads off. Ben Eager. I mean, Edmonton's got a lot of goons on that team to quote-unquote support the young players. The young players seem to be doing just fine on their own, don't they?
In other cities, they seem to be fine without the goons riding shotgun with them.
So.
Yeah, Richie, I think 10 games is good.
Get him out of there.
A big guy. The hit was on Ponikarovsky on Wednesday night? And, I mean, Sutton's a big guy. Ponikarovsky's a big guy, but he's a repeat offender. Like we were talking about during the commercial break, Drew, he was suspended earlier this season. So, you know, that's what you get, in this day and age. That's just the par for the course as far as I'm concerned. 10 games when you're a repeat offender, getting your elbow up like that on a guy that you know you shouldn't be doing that on. So,
Then the NHL, Brendan Shanahan said from the start, there's going to be repercussions.
He's doing a good job.
Yeah, I've got no real complaints with that. Let's talk another suspension earlier this week. David Booth is out 4 to 6 weeks from the Vancouver Canucks. That's a result of being suspended, being hit knee on knee by Avalanche center Kevin Porter. Yep. Porter got a 4-game suspension for his hit. Knee-on-knee hits always seem to cause the most damage and seem to be the dirtiest.
They're pretty rare these days, though, Drew, I must say. I mean, I agree with the suspension. Again, you need to take care of that. But overall, I feel like they used to happen more than they do now.
Yeah, the thing is, Richie, you know what would happen? You know, you're joking about my knee injury, and we used to play in the JSA Floor Hockey League, and that's how I tore my ACL, a knee-on-knee thing. And so the problem is...
You were playing floor hockey and you managed to injure yourself? You managed to hit somebody knee-on-knee?
No, someone else hit me knee-on-knee. But the thing with kneeing is the intent is harder to prove. What typically happens in hockey is that a guy's going in for a body check and the other guy moves out of the way and he is almost in a position where he either passes the guy completely just whiffs on a hit or he either inadvertently or deliberately sticks his knee out. And it, as far as I'm concerned, it's a little bit more difficult here. And in this case, Kevin Porter does deliberately stick out his knee.
Do we not maybe see this as much because teams are playing the trapping style, the puck's dumped in, and people don't carry the puck through the neutral zone as much? Because I feel like that's where a lot of the knee-on-knee collisions happen, or at the top of the
zone. I think knee-on-knee collisions used to happen because a guy gets beat, and the last line of defense is maybe sticking out the leg,
but
how you get the knee-on-knee collision.
Saying, because there's so many guys supporting in the neutral zone that people are just dumping it in or making long passes and tipping into the zone.
Right.
You never have those collisions really anymore.
Because there's not the neutral zone speed being
nobody
generated.
Nobody carries it, yeah. So yeah. I think it's more rare, and you have to take the proper penalty into account when something like that happens, but I don't think it's an epidemic by any means.
No, I would agree with you there. Another suspension from earlier this week. Ville Leino got a 1-game suspension for his elbow to the head of Matt Reed.
Yeah, Reed wasn't injured on the play.
Yeah, I thought it could have been a little bit more.
Yeah, that should have been four or five.
That's one of those ones, guys, where I always wonder why you have to take in the injury into account. Because what if he's? I mean, if Reed goes down for 10 games, misses 10 games, maybe he gets 5 games. But the elbow is still the elbow. I mean,
he looked like he targeted the head.
Yeah.
Now,
he's not a repeat offender, as far as I know.
Kevin Porter wasn't either, though. This is his first suspension, also.
Yeah, I mean, those knee injuries, though.
I think
and Booth is out, so I guess the injury is and if they talk about the fact that the injury, the resulting injury from the incident is always a factor in their decision making.
It's so hard to say immediately that if there's going to be long term. I mean, you know, maybe Matt Reed comes back for a game and then he gets a headache. I mean, you never know with these headshots.
I agree. I totally agree, Drew.
I thought, I mean, seeing the highlights of the Lino one, I'm like, boy, that really is dirty.
I mean,
he was coming through the neutral. He was coming through the middle of the ice.
It wasn't that fast speed play, really.
Yeah, I think that might have factored in. It wasn't really bang bang. It was sort of in almost slow motion, for lack of better description. But I was surprised he only got one, especially with the league paying so much attention allegedly to the hits to the head.
I think I'm an optimist. I think that things are going to get better in the NHL, and I think if Sutton ends up getting 10 games, I think that sends a strong message.
I think
the knee 4 games sends a strong message, and Leno could have gotten more games, but he did get a suspension at least. He isn't a very physical player or a guy that has a history, I don't believe. I don't think he's ever been suspended before. He's only been in the league for 4 years, Leno, that is. But I think that I think people are starting to get the message. I think, you know, the Jets, there has been an incident with Tobias Enstrom. He obviously has the clavicle injury, and that could have been easily a suspension to Jack Skilly. But I think for the most part, and we've watched every single Jets game this year, and there haven't been many headshots. I think the headshots to me are, I'll say it again, is the thing that needs to be taken out of hockey. And I think they're clearly trying to do that. I don't think fighting is the issue. I think it's players using their elbows and their sticks violently, not fighting. I think fighting is, for the most part, fighting doesn't lead to very many concussions. We've already talked about
it. Oh, man, you're trying to get me upset is what you're trying to do.
Richie,
you're trying to get me upset.
Richie, yourself,
we're
going to
talk about it at 2:30. 2:30 we're talking about
it. Gary Lawless and Chris King had a beautiful dinner at Mona Lisa this summer. We talked to Chris King about it, and he said that fighting results in about 10% or less of concussions.
2:30 p.m. we're talking about the Derek Bougard New York Times piece.
The stats don't lie.
You know what? I don't necessarily agree with you there.
The stats don't lie?
You know, the stats might be misleading. They might be underreported.
You don't like stats, Drew.
There's a lot of things that you can make numbers look a lot of different ways. So I don't believe for a second that fighting is all good and healthy for people. Let's talk about that. We're going to talk about that with Derek Bougard later on at the 2:30 hour.
But we're not going to fight, though.
We might.
Okay.
But I'm just going to body blows.
Body blows, not headshots. Yeah, just nice body blows.
Yeah, there's a lot of cushioning in your body area as opposed to your head.
A lot of cushioning.
Let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back on the other side, we're going to be joined by Mike Greenlay, the color commentator for the Minnesota Wild.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program. He's the color commentator for the Minnesota Wild. He's Mike Greenlay. Mike, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here again.
That's great. Mike, I mean, you gotta inject some, if we injected you with some truth serum, did you ever expect that at this point in the season, the Minnesota Wild would be where they are right now?
No, I guess nobody really did. You know, and mostly for the fact that you have a new coach, you have a new system, you have you know, a handful of new players, and of course at the beginning of the season we didn't know what our injury situation would be. Now even now that the Wild have gotten to the point where they're doing it with some pretty significant guys out of the lineup, so. All those factors, I guess you'd expect to be in a different spot, but these guys are certainly buying into a system that Mike Yeo is preaching.
Mike, can you talk a bit about, before we get into the forwards and defense, talk a bit about the tremendous goaltending the team has gotten from, you know, whether it be Josh Harding or Nicholas Backstrom or youngster Hackett.
Yeah, you know what, it's and I think obviously lots of credit goes to the goaltenders and the way they've conducted themselves. Backstrom came in this year with a great attitude to have a good year. Of course, Josh Harding, who missed the entire year last year with a MCL, ACL tear and basically didn't play a lick of hockey He had to rehab, so that was, pretty important for him to come into the season and actually have that mentality that he's going to push Backstrom for playing time. And he's done that. And then, of course, now that Harding, got his head tweaked a little bit, actually it was more like a whiplash-type injury in San Jose. He flew back home to the Twin Cities to try and recuperate there. But, to have, a youngster in Matt Hackett come in, 21 years old, and not only come in and play lights-out hockey, but set an NHL record for the start of a career for a goaltender in the National Hockey League. He strung along 102 minutes and 48 seconds of shutout hockey to begin his NHL career. And, that's an NHL record. And he's 2-0 and he's made something over, 70 some saves, in his first two games. So he certainly came in with a statement. And, the Wild are in very good position when it comes to goaltending. Backstrom will start tonight. Hackett will back him up. And Backstrom, of course, has been out a few games because of a lower body strain that he incurred at home 4 games ago. But, Backstrom will get back in the lineup tonight.
Mike, I didn't have a chance to look this up, but Matt Hackett is related to Jeff Hackett?
Yeah, it's his nephew. Jeff Hackett, of course. It was a kind of an interesting tidbit when we were in San Jose. Because that's where Matt Hackett played his first minutes in the NHL. It's also where Jeff Hackett played in the very, very first game in history for the San Jose Sharks. So it was kind of a neat little oddity there. But, it's his nephew.
Mike, can you talk a little bit about the defense and obviously the departure of Brent Burns? We talked to you in the summer about it, about what would possibly happen from that. Can you talk about some of the defensemen who have stepped up in his absence?
Well, they have some youngsters. I mean, you have guys that are returning like Nick Schultz and Greg Zannon and Clayton Stoner. Those guys are of the, of the more defensive nature. And so, the Wild were kind of saying, well, where are we going to get our puck out of the zone, on the one pass type defenseman? And Jarrett Spurgeon did that a lot actually last year. So he basically was going to come back and do the same, and he has done that. I think we saw glimmers of it with Marco Scandella last year, but unfortunately a couple series of injuries kind of set him aside a little bit last season. But, there was still, everyone knew the potential was there, and he's come in and done that. I mean, both those guys together, among rookies, Scandella and Falk, are near the top. Justin Falk's hurt right now, but Justin Falk and Marco Scandella are a couple guys that rank in the top five in rookie defenseman ice time. And of course, Spurgeon's not a rookie, but he ranks up there as well. So these young guys have come in and really filled a void and have done a great job. And, with the Wild, don't get a ton of offense, period. They certainly don't get a ton from the blue line, but what they find a way. Their offense from the blue line doesn't come direct. It comes more with moving the puck out of the zone well, supporting the play well, that kind of stuff. So they've done a great job at just filling in for a bunch of youngsters.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Greenlay. He's the color commentator for the Minnesota Wild. The Jets and the Wild meet Tuesday night at MTS Center. Mike, spend a little bit of time telling us about the new head coach of the Minnesota Wild, Mike Yeo. I believe he was the AHL coach for the team in Houston, and now he's stepped up to the big leagues. What sort of philosophy has he brought to the dressing room of the Minnesota Wild?
Well, he's very direct and very honest, but not to the point of being detrimental to his players. He's very honest with them. He's a great communicator. Mike Yeo has instilled a pretty good culture with the Wild already. I think he draws some of that, obviously, from having been an assistant coach in Pittsburgh for a few years, won a Stanley Cup with them as an assistant coach with Dan Bylsma. And last year he was the head coach in Houston because, very few coaches probably go directly from assistant coach in the National Hockey League to head coach in the National Hockey League. It's kind of an interesting quirk, but usually, GMs want to see a guy actually take control of a team. And so that's why you'll a lot of times see guys promoted from the affiliate. because they've been actually doing some coaching down there and having to run the team and manage everything. And he did that last year with the Arrows, took them all the way to the Calder Cup Finals. And I think that Chuck Fletcher showed a lot of intestinal fortitude to hire another first-time head coach after the Todd Richards situation didn't work for the first couple of years. And so then they brought in another first-time head coach in Mike Yeo. And he's, he talks a lot about what he calls the process, which is basically, you know, don't worry about how many goals you're out there to score. Don't worry about wins and losses necessarily. Go out there and play what our system is. Go out there and be honest. Don't cheat. And you likely will be in a position to win at the end of the night. And yeah, he's been right about that. I mean, he's got this entire team, and it probably explains the reason why you're able to bring in players and just plug them into the lineup like the Wild are doing right now and continue to win, because they're all playing the same system, and a lot of these guys played that system last year in Houston for Mike Yeo. So it's not a big change for them to come in and play to a certain level and play a certain style of hockey, because basically they're doing the same thing, except they're doing it up a level.
Michael Russo wrote an article about the system, I think at the end of last week or early this week, about how Mike Yeo seems to be a little bit more particular and a little bit more maybe detail-oriented than Todd Richards. Can you maybe speak about that and how the system might be a little bit tighter, quote-unquote?
You know what? I think what it is he's, yes, I mean, his system has, I mean, every system has similarities, I should say, but the nuances are different. And, you know, maybe it's, and I don't know if it's a little more attention to detail or it's asking the players to do an extra little thing here or there that makes a difference. It probably is. And it goes everywhere from the forecheck where, you know, instead of sending two guys on the puck, you send one with a support guy. You know, when you're coming in on the forecheck, are you coming down the faceoff dots? Are you coming down on the outside of the hash marks? I mean, all those kind of little details that, you know, sometimes coaches talk to you about and you kind of glaze over. But the point is that when the players all do it, it works. And when they're all in touch with what the other player on their line is doing, then it works. And they have those types of things for the neutral zone, the defensive zone. So there isn't any question that Mike Yeo is a guy that likes to pay attention to details. And the more importantly is not having the details, but it's getting the players to buy into it. And there's no question that this team has, I guess, what you'd call a layered leadership. You know, they have the Mikko Koivus, Nick Schultz, guys like that, Zanins, who have been around for a little while. You've got the next layer of leadership, guys like Clutterbuck, who've been in the league long enough to be a veteran, but are still not like the most experienced guys on the team. And then you got the young guys. And like I said, you got almost two or three tiers of leadership on that team. And they're all buying into Yeo's system. So yeah, there's some definite nuances that the team has to buy into, and they have.
Mike, you mentioned, you know, some of the guys, the older guys, the leaders, obviously Captain Mikko Koivu and Danny Heatley is one of the veterans. He's the big acquisition that the Wild made, obviously with the trade with the San Jose Sharks. How do you think he's played? Because you look at his numbers and, you know, we're only 29 games into the season, but he's 8 goals and 19 points. But the Minnesota Wild are in first place. How do you think he's played? And do you think maybe, even though his numbers aren't as high, you know, he's doing a good job under Mike Yeo's system, and he's buying into that team concept?
Yeah, no question whatsoever. I mean, because when we watch these games and you know, the team comes, the opposition comes down, and all of a sudden the play's broken up from a good back check, and you look and you rub your eyes and hey, it's number 15. Yeah, he was skating the other way. And that's something that people don't give, that's something that you don't often maybe give a guy like that credit for, is the fact that, hey, maybe he did come back into his own zone and break a play up and back check and work in his own zone and come down deep and help out his defenseman. And I mean, those are things that you don't get statistics for. Those are things that mostly, you know, mostly coaches and scouts and people like that see. Fans don't always pay attention to that. They often look at the score sheet and say, what? He only has this many goals? I mean, that same case in point is for a guy like Mikko Koivu. You know, he has 6 goals on the year. And people are like, well, shouldn't that guy making that do this have this many points? I mean, you know, no. I mean, the guy is one of the best players in the National Hockey League because he does everything. And I think for a guy like Danny Heatley, even though his game isn't as diversified maybe as Mikko Koivu, he's still doing things in areas of the ice that Mike Yeo is asking him to do, and he's doing it, you know, without complaint because he knows that it's getting it done. And the goals that Danny Heatley has scored, actually, a lot of times their first goal of the game, which is certainly a good momentum builder. He scored some big goals near the end of the game, you know, to tie games or to put the Wild ahead or game winners. I mean, he's scored important goals. And I think the Wild, given the fact that they have such a depth in scoring right now, I mean, I think they have five guys with 8 points, and granted, one of them is Devin Setoguchi, who's on IR right now, but five guys with 8 points, and they've got, and then they got Mikko Koivu, who has 6 goals, and they have Pierre-Marc Bouchard with 5 goals. So if Koivu and Bouchard aren't one of your five guys with 8 goals, that means you're getting some balanced scoring, and so that's a positive.
We talked about it. You mentioned many of the players, Mike, and it's given us a nice synopsis of the team that's coming into town on Tuesday. One player we haven't yet spoken about is a former Edmonton Oiler, Kyle Brodziak. Seems to not only have taken kind of a leadership role with the team, but he's playing over 17 minutes a game, and he's one of the guys that has 8 goals. Can you talk about his value as a center and what he's brought to the table?
I think something's trending on Twitter right now. It's called Sign Kyle Brodziak. And I think Chuck Fletcher was going to have to get to work because his value just continues to rise. And, you know, it was up there last year and the year before, but, I mean, he keeps getting better. Here's a guy who, and you know, Mike Yeo talks about certain players, and when he describes certain players, he talks about them not being cheaters on the ice. Mikko Koivu is one of the best at not being a cheater. He plays the game honestly. You know, he doesn't try to cheat to make plays, and so therefore he doesn't get caught out of place. And Brodziak's another one of those guys. The reason why the Wild are doing well is because they're so good up the middle. You know, Mikko Koivu has had a very good season. Matt Cullen's having a breakout season again, for a veteran. And then you got Kyle Brodziak, who brings in that third line, and there's no question in our mind that the reason why that third line, who, you know, he has, Nick Johnson on one side, and a lot of times he'll have either Clutterbuck or Daryl Powell or another player like that on that side. And there's a reason why that third line gives you depth in scoring, and it's because Kyle Brodziak, great in the faceoff circle, great two-way player, kills penalties, and he scores goals. I mean, he's doing really it all right now for the Wild, and his value is maybe underrated. I mean, definitely, I think underrated.
Mike, this is Tuesday night. Will be the first of two meetings between the Jets and the Wild this year. Next year, we're apparently going to be conference or slash division rivals, and we're going to see each other 6 or 7 times. What's the scuttlebutt in the Wild dressing room about the NHL's realignment?
You know what? I think for the most part, people like it. You know, let's put it this way. You know, this sport, not so much for broadcasters, but for players, can be fairly grinding. And you're traveling, and then you're getting beat up every night, and then you have to travel some more, and then you have to play again. And I mean, you know, it really is grueling for players. And so the less travel, the more time you spend at home, that kind of stuff makes a big difference, and certainly makes a difference in the injury department, I think, as well. So I think for the most part, players are welcoming, you know, the fact that they're going to be in their own time zone quite a bit. Players will play where you tell them to, really. But
sure.
But for the most part, I think there's been a pretty good feeling that they're going to be, you know, playing in areas where they don't have to fly all over the country to do it.
Mike, we'll let you go with this last question. Obviously, the hockey world was rocked with the passing of Derek Bougard in the summer, and he's back in the news this week following the New York Times concussion story. Internally with the team, I mean, we know how important he was to the Minnesota community and to the Wild organization. You know, what was the reaction to the stories that appeared in the New York Times this week from an organizational standpoint?
You know what? I think I don't know if there's probably more shock in the everyday hockey fans, you know, than maybe for us, thinking that, you know, something like that is obviously very, very unfortunate, but, you know, I guess in some ways, if you know, I don't think there's a lot of shock in the fact that if you engage in a sport or you know in something where you're having a lot of contact to your head, and be it hockey, football, or whatever, you know, I mean, you're going to do damage, and I think the severity of it certainly has shocked everybody, and you know, it's a sadder end to an already sad story, and you know, obviously it's the fact that he's gone has already hit the organization fairly heavy. And I think the NHL is trying to make, strides to protect their players, as much as they can, but it's still a contact sport. And, you know, that part of the game is still alive and kicking, and it's going to be, you know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how things move on in the future, because, I think obviously there's more and more evidence coming out, not just from Bugard, but from other players, that have been in a similar situation, that this is kind of a debilitating job. I mean, it's being an NHL enforcer has definite drawbacks.
Mike Greenlay, color commentator for the Minnesota Wild, thank you, for as always, for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll see you in Winnipeg Tuesday night.
I'm looking forward to it, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Let's head to commercial break. This is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Jets Red Wings gets underway at 6 o'clock tonight. Puck drop with Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty. Rick Ralph has the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show beginning at 5, and Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 p.m. New York Times had a massive three-part series about the life and times of Derek Bugard in this week's editions. I do encourage you, in case you haven't read it as of yet, to go find it online. It is well worth your time to read it. Probably will take you about an hour to read it all together. It is well worth your time. There's accompanying videos. It's scary, it's frightening, and it really tells you what happens to the people that we call enforcers in the game of hockey. I'm going to ask this question. It's emotionally manipulative, but that's okay. It's my prerogative to do that. After reading that piece and knowing what you know, if your son had a chance to be an NHL enforcer for a career, to make the money that NHL enforcers make, would you want him to do it?
I haven't had a chance to read the piece, Drew. I know that you and Ezra have. I will say that regardless if you're reading the piece or not, I wouldn't.
I don't like how that question is always used to almost... Well, actually, you know what, Drew? You said it was manipulative.
I put it out there. It's 100% an emotionally manipulative question. I admit it from
the
start.
I'm going to answer it, and it is a three-part series, and you definitely should read it. And I've only read the first part. We talked about this. I told you that I only read at a grade 7 level.
Right.
So it takes me 4.5 hours to read what you read in 10 minutes.
I understood.
So it is a good article because it's almost like honoring his life, because it goes through the first part.
Would you want your son to be an NHL enforcer?
No. But I still think fighting should be in hockey. And we don't have enough time to argue this. We've argued this. We have lots of time.
We have many, many minutes. Let me ask you, if you're the answer to both of your questions is no. Both of you answered no.
Yeah.
So why was it okay for somebody else's son to get hit in the head repeatedly, but it's not okay for your son to get hit in the head?
Well, there are currently parents that are allowing their kids to fight.
Yeah, there are.
So why don't you ask them?
Well, I mean, I'm asking you guys. I unfortunately don't have the opportunity to ask other parents at the moment, but I'm asking you to put on your
assuming people have the same beliefs on this that you do. I mean, there's people who will likely say, just take the money and run.
Even if it causes your son tremendous brain damage.
Well,
do you think there's a linkage? Do you think there's a linkage between concussions and fighting in hockey?
Do you think there's a linkage?
Yes.
Do you think that if you get hit in the head,
I'm sure
as fighters do, do you think that they get concussions?
Consistently, of course.
So you're saying there's no doubt in your mind?
I don't know. I don't have the facts back it up. I would have no. In my opinion, I don't have a doubt.
Okay.
Continual fighting? Yes.
So, and do you think there's a connection between concussions and brain damage?
Yes.
Then why can
same
the
thing,
NHL?
Right? You've said this many
I've
times.
Said that
it
they
is the same thing.
I've said they should stop calling them concussions. They should say, is that with minor brain damage?
The point is, if once in a while a guy gets in a fight to defend himself, wherever it may be, to me, to police the game itself, as like again left fighting, we've talked about this numerous times, it's fine. It's the enforcers. And it's like Kevin Lowe talking about how there's a little bit of a problem. It's like, yeah, Kevin, there's a problem. You guys signed Ben Eager. You signed Dorsey Hordachuk. You signed Andy Sutton. It's like, don't tell me there's a problem, and then go sign those three guys. Pick, look at the Jets.
Okay.
Is there a fighter on the team?
Well, there are guys that fight.
Is there a fighter on the team?
No, there's not.
Well, no, Tanner Glass and Chris Thorburn fight, but they're not goons at all.
Do we consider the team to lack toughness?
No.
So, I think people have to understand. When you listen to NFL players talk, you know, they talk about, I forget who this was on the NFL Network talking about, Warren Sapp, fake tough and real tough. Real tough's between the lines. Fake tough's talking after.
Well, sure.
Real tough is being tough. A game, it happens to be natural that you get into a fight because the guy, you know, blindsides you, blah, blah, blah. Fine.
So you're saying
artificial fights for no reason that suddenly, according to, I don't know who, change the momentum of a game, need to go. But the problem is systematically. It's a systemic problem, and I'll tell you why. Because players continue to believe they can make the NHL by becoming fighters when they're generally, because you don't generally have a guy who's a fighter at 16 and he fights his way up to the big leagues. He comes up and he realizes at some point somebody says to him, you have to play the game a different way to make it. If that avenue wasn't available, meaning if teams didn't employ only fighters, that guy would never change his game. The NHL has as much of a burden on him than the parents do, really.
So you would be of the argument that fighting it's okay to get hit in the head sometimes in a fight.
Yeah, because, I mean, truth be told, many people in real life get in, you know, one or two, three fights in their life. Right?
That's fine. Yeah.
If you're not an enforcer, you're generally not.
But when people get into a fight outside of the hockey arena,
yeah,
the only place in the world that bare knuckle fighting is considered legal is in a hockey arena in either the NHL or juniors. That is the only place in the world that bare knuckle fighting is
considered
legal.
My point is,
Drew,
if you don't have these guys as enforcers, quote unquote, they don't, like, some of these enforcers practice fighting.
Yeah, they take boxing lessons.
I'm talking about the fights that end up being natural, but these guys aren't fighters. You know, Wayne Gretzky drops the gloves to defend himself four times or three times in his career. You watch him fight, you laugh. The idea is, though, that he's dropping his gloves to make a statement to defend himself, and it's a rare occasion. He's not a good fighter, and generally it ends up being a tugging match.
When was the last time you left an NHL hockey game and said, boy, I missed out, I'm upset there wasn't a fight, I missed there being a fight in that game?
I haven't, but there's lots of people who do.
You really believe that the Boston Jets game on Tuesday night, there were no fights in that game? You believe people left that arena disappointed? That there were no fights?
Maybe not that particular game, but there are games.
Well, most of the Jets games this year have not had fighting in them. Have not had a fight. Most NHL games don't have a fight. You think there's people leaving those games upset and feeling though?
Well, what about the Buffalo game? That's more of a natural occasion, but people are upset when there's not fights if there's a reason to defend somebody. So in some senses, there are people disappointed. Lindy Ruff's disappointed there wasn't a fight when Milan Lucic ran Ryan Miller.
I think you can stand up for a teammate without having to punch the guy in the head with your bare knuckles.
Okay.
I think it's only an NHL mentality.
Sport of the Big Four that has a weapon in the hand.
Yeah. It's the only.
So would you rather somebody slash somebody in the stomach?
You know, I don't know what the answer is. I really don't. I'm on a bully pulpit and it's easy for me to say these things. But given the evidence that we have.
In baseball, you throw at a guy, there's a brawl. The guys try and throw knuckles at each other.
Yeah, and I think it shouldn't be allowed. It's ridiculous in baseball.
It's not allowed.
It is.
But it is.
It is allowed. If it's not, look, in the NBA, they used to have a huge fighting problem. Huge fighting problem. And what did they do? They said it's not allowed. Period. You leave the bench. Even if you take two steps onto the court, they drew a very clear line. You get anywhere near the action of a fight, even if it's taking two steps towards
the NBA,
something.
They don't have weapons, though. That's what the problem is. You're essentially trying to use knuckles to get to stop from there being stick swinging, essentially, Drew.
I understand that. I understand that the stick swinging, that that the problem is...
I think if you take fighting completely out of the game,
yeah,
you're going to have some careless stuff going on out there.
Let me ask you about the humanity of it involved. These are humans who are fighting and...
Who want to fight.
Yeah, admittedly. Admittedly.
Nobody makes you drop your gloves, Drew.
Well, funny you should say that. There's also a number of stories in the NHL history about enforcers who are told to go out and fight, who say they won't do it, and they're blackballed out of the league. Now, granted, that might be the only reason they're in the league to begin with.
But by the sword, die by the sword. You get paid to fight, and if you don't want it, then you're not talented enough to play, then somebody else is more talented than you.
Right, but
I'm fine with that.
When they replace when one enforcer gets booted from a team, he's usually not being replaced by a skilled player.
I should get back to the point. There shouldn't be an enforcer to begin with, is my point. Okay.
So sometimes it's okay to allow bare knuckled fighting and the consequences
thereof. If it's natural within the course of a game.
If Sidney Crosby got his first concussion in the course of a fight.
Like Mike Richards gets blindsided last week, okay, by, I forget who was in Florida now, I'm forgetting his name. Anyhow, he gets blindsided as EK, and he goes after him to try and fight him, which he did. I'm fine with that.
I think that, I just want to jump in here really quickly. I think that Drew and Gary Lawless has come on the show and written about it. He's one of the people that are, in favor of getting fighting out of hockey. There's a lot of people, and it's growing, and I think that's fine. But I think that I'm going to say this again and again, and I mean I don't have to justify myself. I've said this on the show before that I'm in favor of fighting in hockey, and I mean it's as simple as that. You either are for it or against it. You can make your argument, but I think that the main problem in hockey, and I'll say this ad nauseum, I think the main problem in hockey is hitting from behind and headshots, and I think those cause more concussions and brain damage than fighting does. And I think if you look at the stats, I know that a lot of enforcers have come out and said, that they've experienced really bad things because they were fighting in the NHL for a long time. But I think that...
But Ezzy, let me ask you this. Let me in for a second. Is fighting the cause for their substance abuse, or is their substance abuse the cause for the fighting? Are there studies on that?
Substance abuse in itself is an issue that I think has way too many stigmas.
You're right. It's a chicken and egg argument.
And according to this article, which I haven't read, apparently the Rangers were letting Bugard know when drug tests were coming.
Yeah, they were giving him the heads up when drug tests were coming, so he would avoid being caught. I mean, the NHL has a lot of problems. If the allegations in this article are true, there's a lot of serious problems there in that Derek Bugard was getting prescription drugs prescribed to him by multiple different doctors on multiple different teams. The fact that a guy who's the property of the New York Rangers can get a prescription from a guy who's a doctor for the Minnesota Wild.
All due respect
to Derek Bugard. And they don't talk to each other. The left arm doesn't know what the right arm's doing.
All due respect to Derek Bugard.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, seen him play before. He had no...
Should not have been an NHL hockey player.
But not only that, Drew, never mind the fact of the fighting. Derek Bugard, we talked about headshots. Derek Bugard was a dirty player.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy ran over Alex Hemsky a few times, really dirty. He had no regard for anybody's well-being at all.
I'm not disputing that.
So, I mean...
I'm not saying he was a saint. By no means am I saying is he a saint. I'm just saying, based on the evidence before us regarding...
Yeah, his brother's fighting now, right?
Which is mind-boggling.
So you talk about parents letting it happen. Clearly, there are parents who...
I agree. It's mind-boggling. I'm saying, obviously, the parents can't control their sons, or they can't... They can't tell their sons you can't fight.
You're also
so I'm
assuming that the values you have are the same as everybody else's.
It's incumbent upon the league to not allow it. That's what I'm saying. It is the league's responsibility, much like they did it in the NBA.
See, I understand what you're saying, but another problem you're going to have is when you have former players, Ezzy, running all these teams, they want to do it their way. It's like the doctors who want to give the residents a hard time because they were given a hard time.
Yeah.
And also that takes time. So the problem is, can the NHL, short of banning fighting, what can they do? Well, the problem is you keep hiring guys like Kevin Lowe, who played the game, and Kevin Lowe knows hockey, but you hire guys like Kevin Lowe, Steve Tambellini, they sign all these guys because that's what was done in their day and age. Maybe if you have an unconventional kind of GM, like a Mike Gillis, where's the fighter on that team?
We're getting a lot of commentary on Twitter about this. I just want to make a point. I'm not saying that by banning fighting, you're going to remove concussions from the game of hockey.
No, you can't, because it's not just one thing.
It's not one thing. I'm just saying,
those are undeniable.
I'm just saying, yeah, concussions are going to happen in hockey over any number of different issues. What I'm saying is that if you can ban fighting in order to reduce the number of concussions and reduce the effect that getting punched in the head has on people, that's something that's incumbent upon the NHL to do.
I think it's upon the 30 respective general managers and the coaches to stop employing these guys and to somehow have this belief that a fight in a game that's completely and totally artificial changes the momentum and changes the result. People want to believe what they want to believe. That's what happens. You see a goal, you know, they want to connect one with the other, right? That's just human nature, I think, to a very large extent, is you see a fight, two guys drop the gloves, you see a fight, and then a goal is scored the next shift. You're going to attribute the goal to the fight as opposed to maybe it's just a random event.
How often have you seen on any? Do you really feel a fight causes a
exactly.
momentum change?
Hardly, if ever, Drew.
I mean, and you know, and you see
Jerome McGinley maybe in the 0-4 playoffs.
Even then,
but that kind of fight builds team morale and character. The fight with some guy dropping the gloves just last night. What, Thorburn and who? Yesterday was it?
Thorburn, I don't recall who it was. It was one of their defensemen.
Tim
I think.
Gleason.
Was it Tim Gleason?
Yeah, Tim
I think.
Gleason. So Tim Gleason needs to make a
Thorburn won that fight.
Make a statement to his team to show up there because his team isn't very good on the ice. Did it make a difference?
No, they lost 4-2 and they were down 4-0 very quickly after that fight. So
you're an expert, Drew? Is that what you're telling me? We're gonna play that clip. I think we got that clip.
Okay, let's hear it.
This is Andy Sutton. Andy Sutton.
You didn't know your elbow came up and hit him in that.
Are you asking me or are you telling me?
No, I'm asking you.
Yes. You're an expert?
No, it was on the replay.
So you're an expert?
No, it was on the replay.
So you saw it? You're saying yes. You saw it? It's on. You're an expert?
Yes.
You're not an expert, so we'll...
I saw it. I'm asking you, did you know you got your elbow up?
You're telling me I got my elbow up?
It was on the replay.
You're an expert. You know it was up.
Okay. That's it, guys. Thank you.
Andy Sutton may not be an expert. The three of us are experts.
I love it.
Let's head to commercial.
It doesn't take an expert to tell you that Andy Sutton's
a dirty player. You don't need an expert to know that, exactly. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the program. That was a good talk about concussions. Believe it or not, we haven't resolved quite anything just yet, but I'm sure it'll be something we'll touch on throughout the course of the season as more of these situations will arise.
I don't think there's anybody in the NHL out right now with a concussion due to fighting, but Sidney Crosby's out due to a headshot. So let's try to minimize those headshots.
Minimize concussions and minimizing in any and all manner. Let's talk about Martin St. Louis, because it will affect the Jets and in-division rival. Tampa Bay Lightning have been scuffling to start the season here. Mm-hmm.
Took a puck in the face,
took a
right?
puck to the eye, out indefinitely. Yeah. No longer the NHL's Iron Man. This Tampa Bay team, are they going to turn it around anytime soon? A lot of high hopes for them. They're 13th in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, how many points are they out of the 8th spot, though?
Well, they're 5 points out, so your point's well taken in that sense.
You know, Drew, they haven't been getting the production they expected from some of their support players, like Dominic Moore, Steve Downey, guys like that. Eric DeHatch returned to the Globe, and he wrote about that. Their defense... never really the strongest part of their game, and then their goaltending has been awful.
Yep.
We all, I think, agreed that they were to take a downturn this year in terms of their overall point total, whether we thought, clearly we didn't think it would be this significant. So right now, the Rolison-Garon combo right now is pretty ugly, and if you're not getting the goal-scoring production, you need your goalie to carry you, kind of like Minnesota gets their goaltending to carry them, like the Jets have had their goaltending carry them on more than a few nights. You need that, and if you don't have it, it seems people think it's readily available, sure, but when you're not getting it, every game seems so long, you seem so much farther from the playoff contention. And so I wonder if, Dwayne Wilson isn't getting any younger, guys, you have to wonder if they're not thinking about an acquisition in mm-hmm. between the pipes in the next little bit.
Yeah, are they looking at Corey Schneider or somebody like that?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen there, but yeah, I think those are the two big things. I think it's going to be tough. St. Louis is one of the best players, obviously. Rolison's been really bad. His numbers are pretty bad. And those guys that were stepping up last year and in the regular season and playoffs, like Teddy Purcell and, Richie mentioned it, Bergenheim, Moore, they're not getting the job done, Downey. So that's almost as shocking as the Minnesota Wild playing that well is the Lightning and the Capitals that have just struggled, because we looked at the Southeast Division before this year started and we all said Washington won. I think Richie and I both picked Washington to finish first in the East, and that could still happen, but it's going to be a tough road ahead with Pittsburgh, Philly, and Boston there. But you look at the Lightning and the Capitals,
easy division, though.
having trouble scoring goals, you know, not getting the goaltending, maybe less so for Washington.
Gary just texted too, mentioning letting Mike Smith go and how he looks in Tampa too. So
in Phoenix,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think that's the first, and that's probably the first blemish I would say on the GM reign of Steve Yzerman is not doing anything to reinforce that goaltending position.
Yeah, not in particular necessarily the Mike Smith. Thomas Vokoun readily available.
Yeah.
I mean, why not bring him in?
Exactly. We've mentioned that a few times on the program. You look at the Southeast right now. It's topsy-turvy. Florida continues to chug along. 37 points. They lead the division by 6 points over Washington, 31. Jets, 30
points.
But
it's interesting you talk about that. Andrew, you finished the division in a second, but you talk about them being, six points up on how many points Washington?
6 points up on Washington.
6 points up, and you think Florida's played incredibly, and Washington has played terribly. So it's funny how in this day and age with these three-point games that Gary Bettman loves.
Everything's perception.
Everything is so a team exceeding expectations, a team below expectations, yet 6 points apart. So, I think Winnipeg was 2 points ahead of Carolina a week and a half ago.
And Richie, I want to mention this too.
Well, Florida's got 5 overtime losses. There's your difference.
We shouldn't jump on Stevie Y too much because acquisitions have been very good. But it was announced this week that the Anaheim Ducks are going to release Devontae Smith-Pelly to the World Junior team, and the Lightning are going to release Brett Connolly. So I don't know if you want to read anything into that, but Brett Connolly is a guy that they could have kept him up in the NHL.
What that tells me, Ezzy, is that Steve Yzerman still has an idea of the long term. He understands that Brett Connolly's development as a player is best aided by putting him back into the World Juniors.
Best on best.
Right, and playing against his competition at his age and getting a lot of ice time. So I think that's a good sign for Tampa Bay Lightning fans, realizing that Yzerman isn't looking at everything in a vacuum and sees the big picture, which I think he's good at. Another thing we need to point out, Guy Boucher obviously got kind of showed up there by Peter Laviolette and the Flyers.
Yeah.
When we mentioned that as a caution, I think in the preview show, will Guy Boucher get a bit figured out? Maybe he's figured out. Well, more so, his system's been figured out. So there's countless factors here that go into this.
Yeah, year one, something that is dynamic and new. By year two, might be stale and repetitive.
It's just you give these. I mean, people like to mock coaches and people like to mock these guys are sometimes not making the right decisions, but these guys are smart hockey men and scouts and coaches, and they can break a system pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And there's always and so what they've done there, and we don't like the neutral zone stuff, and it's mostly boring, but teams have ways to get around it, and look what happens when you're not new. As you mentioned, Drew, it gets stale, and there are ways to get around it. So.
Let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side, one final segment. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.
Students, teachers, professionals, and hobbyists, discover everything you need for the creative mind at Colors Artist Supplies, now bigger and better than ever. And now, during their Christmas sale, get 30% off everything in store with 99 gift ideas under $99 for the young and the young at heart. Everything you need to draw, paint, airbrush, and let your inner artist shine at 30% off. Colors Artist Supplies, 4 blocks south of Confusion Corner at 337 Pemina Highway.
Hi, Doug Steven of Wow Hospitality. I'm here with Raj from Mondetta to tell you about this year's holiday season gift cards. When you buy a Wow gift card of $100, we're going to give you something very special from the boys at Mondetta. Raj, tell them about it.
Yes, it's a polar fleece jacket that would normally retail for $70. Now you can certainly keep it for yourself or maybe give away as a gift. Another great partnership between Wow and Mondetta.
Thanks, Raj. Check out all of our locations at wowhospitality.com and have a safe and happy holiday season.
In the heart of the Osborne Village beats a true passion for sports. Cheer on all your favorites at Winnipeg's newest sports lounge, the Cheer Bar and Grill. Grab your friends and catch all the home team's hockey games live on their HD TVs and 2 giant screens. Win great prizes each night and get in the game yourself with pool tables, Czech hockey, and foosball. After the game, get loud with bands, DJs, karaoke, and more. The Cheer Bar and Grill. True sports passion lives in the heart of the village.
Pioneer Windows and Doors have been serving Winnipeg since 1989. A lot has changed in the last 22 years, but one thing remains the same. Winnipeggers love good quality at an affordable price. That's what Pioneer was built on. We make our windows right here. Our installation crews are part of the Pioneer team, and our warranties are second to none. We quote them, we make them, we install them, and we service them. One stop for all your window and door needs. Call 832-5586 today. Pioneer Windows. Quality by design, affordable price. Pioneer. That's the Manitoba way to do it.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mark Rikus for Rikus Orthodontics. Like Winnipeg's new hockey team, we also have a new team which includes a key acquisition, our new partner, Dr. Jared Rikus at Rikus Orthodontics. Continuing the tradition of great orthodontic treatment with braces, Invisalign, or early orthodontic treatment.
If you're unhappy with your smile, call Rikus Orthodontics today at 925-GRIN. That's 925-4746 for your free orthodontic consultation. And start smiling more.
Watch your Winnipeg Jets at Boston Pizza, and you could win one of 82 pairs of front row ice level tickets on the glass. We'll give away during every Winnipeg Jets game. These tickets are so close to the ice, you could be the goal judge. Watch the Winnipeg Jets at Boston Pizza and get your pass to the glass. Boston Pizza, here to make you happy.
Last night I dreamt that I saw
Hi, my name is Norva Riddell, VP of Sales and Marketing for the Winnipeg Jets Hockey Club. Christmas for me is all about spending time with family and friends. Christmas for me over the last few years has taken on a whole new meaning now that we have young children as part of our family. Spending the day with them, sharing in their excitement, and watching them open that special gift on Christmas morning is really what it's all about. Please stop by the St. Vitel Center and drop off a new unwrapped toy for the Christmas miracle so that every child can have that opportunity on Christmas morning.
Riverstone Spa at Inn at the Forks and TSN 1290 remind you that the Christmas miracle needs your support. Please visit the St. Vitel Center Food Hall with your gift of cash or toy donations.
It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon.
Rapid fire.
The Columbus Blue Jackets announced Craig Patrick will join the franchise as a senior advisor to hockey operations. He will be responsible for advising GM Scott Housen on trades, free agent signings, and evaluating prospects. This time next year, when the Columbus Blue Jackets are our division rival, will Craig Patrick be the general manager of that team?
That's a good question, Drew. I don't know if Craig Patrick has the intention to still manage after kind of leaving Pittsburgh. But generally, when you see these advisor roles added at a point, you know, the point, my concern if I'm Scott Housen is this. I would want an advisor as he at the beginning of my general manager career. 3 to 4 years in, I would assume I don't need an advisor. Now, I realize Scotty Bowman serves an advisor, and you can kind of he can be a sounding board, like in Chicago, for example. Having said that, why wasn't Scott Housen using him as an advisor beforehand? Is this somebody that's been imposed upon him as a helper? There's many factors here that make you that would lead you to believe that Scott Housen's job is in question. And frankly speaking, guys, Scott Housen has not done a good job in Columbus.
I think getting Craig Patrick in there is a great idea. He won the 2 Stanley Cups with Pittsburgh, and he's a member of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. But I think Richie P. could have advised Scott Housen not to sign James Wisniewski to 6 years and $32 million or whatever the heck it was at the beginning of the season. As far as him taking over his job, Drew, that's a difficult question to answer. But
that's why you get paid to answer the difficult questions.
I don't get paid. I volunteer. So the thing is, I think that the writing is on the wall, and I don't think it's out of the question to expect Scott Housen to be gone at the end of the year, because
he doesn't deserve to keep his job.
Let's be honest. Coaching, Scotty Arneal is a great coach. It's not coaching there. The team has not been built well at all, and they went for the short-term solution this year, and it's backfired terribly.
Scotty Howson's biggest error with Wisniewski, the Wisniewski signing notwithstanding, that maybe the biggest error was the Steve Mason contract, and we talked about it at the time.
Exactly.
It made no sense, but go ahead, Drew.
New York Rangers forward Artem Anisimov caused a kerfuffle Thursday night.
I'm glad you included this.
With his goal celebration, where he turned his stick around and pretended to use it as a sniper rifle. The Lightning immediately accosted him upon seeing the celebration. Do you think the Lightning will sink further vengeance against Anisimov when these teams next play?
Yeah.
Yo, for sure.
And the thing is, Richie, first off, he should be ashamed of himself. First off, it looked awkward and stupid what he was doing, and you just don't do that. Teemu Selänne created that move, and I've already said that.
Factually incorrect.
Okay, well, maybe he didn't start it, but
Tiger Williams?
Ted Lindsay.
Okay,
Ted Lindsay.
He perfected the move, let's put it that way. He's the most famous guy to use the...
But he didn't shoot it at somebody, he shot it at a glove.
Okay? Yeah, anyways, I've said this before. Teemu Selänne is the greatest human being on earth.
Also, Teemu did it when he broke the record. He didn't do it in a meaningless game.
Right.
Again,
and the thing is, and the other thing is, St. Louis and Stamkos are coming after the guy, and he looks like a scaredy cat. It was embarrassing for
Steve.
It was embarrassing for hockey to see what Anisimov did.
Yeah, that was a poor performance. Stevie Johnson called him and said it was a good
job. You know what that reminded me of? When Kerwin Bell on the Toronto Maple... remember when Kerwin Bell on the Argos, sorry, not Maple Leafs, spiked the ball into his own...
Lower region?
Yeah, that's what that reminded me of. It was embarrassing.
The relationship between the Toronto media and Leafs management became further strained last week when Ron Wilson decided to start James Reimer on Saturday night after he indicated to the media it was going to be Jonas Gustafsson following Friday's practice. Do you think Ron Wilson acted inappropriately in, quote-unquote, lying to the media, or the Toronto media creating a mountain out of a molehill?
I don't care here about starters here, Drew. I mean, he doesn't have to tell the media who the starter is going to be. He wants a competitive advantage over the other team. Injuries I have more of an issue with, but overall, who he's going to start, he doesn't owe the media any kind of time, a certain amount of time prior to a game to let them know who's starting. He can start whoever he wants.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I have no problem in general with coaches not telling you who the starting goaltender will be. I'd like to hear what the injuries are, actually. Yesterday we were told that it was an upper body injury, and Jeff Skinner had the flu. That irks me more as quote-unquote being a member of the media. So
Final
I use that term loosely.
No kidding. Final question. In an interview on our sister station, TSN 1050 in Toronto.
Hold on. TSN?
Sorry,
hold
TSN.
On, Drew. Is it TSN or TSN?
I was stumbling on my words, but I appreciate you guys pointing that out for everybody.
Buick TSN or?
In an interview on TSN 1050 in Toronto, NHLPA director Donald Fair indicated
Fear?
Oh, for God's sakes, that he and Gary Bettman will not begin discussions about a new CBA until following the All-Star Game. There will be a little less than 8 months to hammer out the CBA.
We're giving Drew
Are
such
the
a hard
NHL
time.
And NHLPA waiting too long before beginning negotiations?
Yeah, of course, they always are, but it's all about leverage, so I don't think it's going to change. But I, Drew, don't see any reason why they couldn't be in there right now, at least hammering out the easy points, quote-unquote, right? And the things that aren't going to be that contentious. Hammer those out now, and then worry about the significant issues later on. But the problem is, leverage. And speaking of leverage, if you have a big issue, you have to give in on maybe a couple little issues to get the big one.
Sure. Yeah, I think they should be negotiating, and I think that the big deal is that they should cap the terms of contracts. And that's obviously going to be one of the big issues.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something sick like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Very quickly, Richard Pollock.
I'm cheering Kirk Muller because I think the style of play that the Hurricanes now employ, while they don't have a lot of talent, is actually very exciting to watch and is going to be better for the game.
Ezra Ginsberg.
I usually cheer, as you know, but I'm going to jeer who we were just talking about, Artem Anisimov. I don't think he shouldn't be in the NHL anymore. That was despicable. Seriously,
That's a harsh punishment, Ezra.
You don't replicate Timu's move and do it poorly. Just like I shouldn't have dressed up as Gary Lawless on Halloween without his permission. You just don't do it.
Well played.
Gary's standing in the corner nodding, so I think it's an agreement. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Theron Fleury. Graham James was pleaded guilty. He'll be sentenced later on. I think Theo, I hope he gets some closure out of this.
Absolutely.
And he put himself front and center. He became the face for victims. And kudos 100% to Theo Fleury, and hopefully he'll get some closure out of this. Speaking of closure, that's it for this show.
We'd like to thank our guests on this week's program. They were Gabe Desjardins from Behind the Net Hockey. They were Bob Duff from the Windsor Star. And they were Mike Greenlay from the Minnesota Wild. He's the color commentator. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm Drew Mandel. From our lips to your ears, thanks for listening. Hustler and Lawless are next.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.